October 11, 2012, F-bomb.
Yeah, no, it is. It's great, and I really appreciate it.
Okay. And then the sneaky ones can always just go to the 10th floor once you get in the room.
So that said, there's the passes above John here on the Chinook tail, and you can go out and they don't have to sign those out because Bill already has, but make sure that you get them back to the...
I don't think, do you have to sign them out?
No, you did.
Oh, yeah, I did up there, but you don't have to. Yeah.
Okay, so...
so if you want to get rid of trouble, if
you want to get rid of Bill, just run with
it.
If any of those disappear, then it's my ass.
Yeah. You shouldn't have said that.
Okay, so let's get started. Everybody have their agenda. Too much fun. Tammy, of course, has made delicious snacks, so... One of them is the Halloween finger we get to have once a year, so you make sure everybody gets their finger so you can use it appropriately.
Silent commentary on stuff.
That's right, yeah. Thumbs up, fingers up, fingers down, fingers sideways.
Good, that'll be a voting tool.
Oh, we used it for many things. Before we get started, let's go around the room and then hit the phone for introductions.
Pretty bland, really.
Starting with Mr. Benton.
Scott Benton, BPA. Yep.
And Center Core, Walla Walla.
Rick Kruger, Oregon Fish and Wildlife.
Agnes Lute, Bonneville.
Christine Peterson, BPA.
Bill Heavlin, NOAA.
Ken Phone, Core, Walla Walla.
Terry Fredericks, NOAA.
Miro,
who are you?
Miro Zindo Jande.
David Wales, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Bob Cordy, Core of the Dalles.
Andy Trailer, Core, Bonneville Project.
Bob Versus, Core, Portland District.
Andy,
Core,
Robert. Robert Stansel, Core.
And Bernard Clapp with the Core. On the phone, we have Russ and in somebody else, I believe.
It's Brad Trumbo and Walla Walla with the Core.
Brad and Russ.
Brad.
Russ, you still with us?
I am still with you, yes.
Thank you, sir. Okay, let's approve the September minutes. Comments? Finger up. Finger down. Finger up. Got it. For the agenda, is there any add-ons?
I don't think we have any add-ons. I think since we got Brad on the phone, we might ask whether we can get to that earlier rather than later in the agenda.
That
was down under coordination. Yeah, Ice Harbor 4.4.
4.4, yeah, we can hit that right off.
Okay.
We have an additional update from the
Dalles. The Dalles has an additional update?
Oh, yeah.
This
way, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Thanks for the reminder.
So, at the end of this, Mike Parsley from the USGS wanted to come in and present some sturgeon information to us. He's got a presentation, and after that, there'll be a sturgeon work group, apparently. Task group, but I don't see Mr. Houseman or Bjorn is on annual leave, so. Are you filling in for Bjorn?
We'll see.
Just want a finger? All right, well, let's get started. Action items for Walla Walla, 2.1 to start with.
Okay, well, you know, basically, I think John sent out the updated trucking schedule, so everybody received that, so I think we're good there. I think that was really the major due out. Basically, everybody's aware that we still have transport going on at the two upper snakes through the end of October, being Granite and Goose. Fish numbers have picked up a little bit just in the last week. We were down really low for about the 3 weeks prior to that, and we're back up 400 to 600 at Granite and probably 100 to 200 at Little Goose just in the last few days. So that's about it for the transport update, and then if we can...
For those of us who forget their email sometimes, what's the actual schedule?
Well, I brought a copy of it. Basically,
what's the end date, I guess?
The 31st will be the last truck from Grand Goose, so it's consistent with all previous years and the Fish Passage Plan.
Who's the last truck?
last year of that study?
Which study?
There's always some study going on.
There's always some study going on.
You know what there is? It is the last year of, when we get to October 31st, we always have the fall Chinook study group coming in saying, oh, by the way, can you operate your facilities later than usual? We haven't had them make that request, but we are aware that this is the last year of that study. So I don't think we actually made any adjustments last year, but it's not a bad question, and we did entertain it before we came down here, but at this point we haven't heard anything.
It's like the sixth year of the last study.
Well, there is no O&M funding to support it next year.
There is no last year of transport studies.
Okay. There is no last year.
Started 30 years ago, and
it'll probably last year.
I don't think that's probably going to be true. Next year, we'll probably...
You got a transport cop?
We should have a transport cop by then, hopefully. And we really do have, at Walla Walla, for FY13, there really isn't much research money to support much for until we get some more funding streams sort of built in here down the line. And so I do think that the end is on the horizon there, and it is my hope that a transport cop will help resolve some of the issues that are ongoing. There's, of course, never enough information from a research standpoint. However, I'm actually at the point you have to draw the line somewhere, especially when we have greater needs, as we've talked about here, for maintenance at the projects. So, you know, my focus as the business line manager, just being in there a year, really is to try to get money into fixing the adult ladders and some of the JFF issues that we have. The reliability of a lot of our structures is very much in question. So the ability to maintain what we have right now is very, very unstable for the long-term future. And so rather than continue to look at all the things that are interesting, my perspective is that we need to fix things, and then we go back and look at what's interesting to try to better manage. But if we can't maintain, so as we check for performance standards, and then if we can't maintain the structures that allowed us to get there,
yeah,
that could suck, you know.
That's a technical term, right?
It's in the air.
So I know it's not very popular when you have a region that has come to rely on research, and there's a lot of FTEs affected and things like that, and so not a popular topic anywhere. Yeah, it is an institution, and
it has been for a long time, although.
I think that maybe it puts a little more pressure on some of the CRFM for things that maybe haven't been addressed, and. You know, they're really there for FCRPS, and I know you've come in strong. Dean Holacek has come back to me that you had strong comments on bull trout and things like that. I wrestle with why that hasn't ever been able to be on that other funding stream as well. But anyway.
No.
I will stop talking now.
No, I think
that's
what you said.
Yeah, you're right on.
Right on. Gary and I were just talking about it. We've got at least 30 years of transportation research.
Yeah.
Now, come on now. Isn't that kind of enough to make it good, to make it good enough?
Yeah.
And now turn that money, if we can, and we can,
yeah,
turn that money to maintaining the facilities.
The thing I'd like for you to do is to get that to Dean and to Marvin. We need to see that transport cop. We'll talk about it in a couple weeks at the Walla Walla.
Push them, but they do have a draft that in-house went around that I reviewed a couple weeks ago. So
they're
making some progress.
I don't want to see another book report or another data summary, which is kind of what Dean has told me. We talked about this, and I just want to see this to be more of a plan, a prescription for the future rather than a better summary of the past, because you know how those end up.
I
don't make any decisions.
I hear
nice
you. I think my impression is that it will leave the interaction with the region into putting on the table the alternatives that people want to discuss.
That's
and where they want to take it.
Should be.
So hopefully this one will be... Hopefully it will be better than some of the others have been in terms of the struggle, but I don't know. You know, understanding, well, There's other ones that have never seen the light of day.
I'm hoping this one will actually see the light of day.
I'm hoping so, too. I'm actually hoping that one and Lower Granite see the light of day.
Yeah. Anything that we haven't moved past should see the light.
Because there again, just to put my plug in, you know, the Lower Granite COP has the potential to help us with some of the infrastructure challenges we have at Lower Granite. And I for one, weighed in when I was taking a look at that as, you know, we have some really critical needs up there of things that are deteriorating, and it's part of our main structure there of how we move fish when they're collected on screens down through the separator. And to get that work done is very important in the not-too-distant future. And so the feedback that I've gotten is that in Fitterwigs, that some of you have weighed in that you also needed a bypass outfall to be included in that. So, you know, to me, that's the kind of stuff that as you get into this COP needs to be negotiated. But the operations group, we've taken a strong stand that, yes, we want to work with the region to find out how do we move forward on this critical element. Because, again, if we can't get it done through that mechanism in the COP, which would mean CRFM would pay for it, then we're going to have a difficult time with O&M maintenance dollars ever getting to it. Yeah. And it's going to fail sometime in season when we're probably in spring with a bunch of fish out there, you know. So it really is important to do at least that phase one and have phase one be something that everybody can buy into. So, off my soapbox again. I was hoping to get other Ice Harbor.
Yeah, let's go right to Ice Harbor.
So, Ken, you want to do the lead with Brad on the phone for the Ice Harbor JSATs?
Yeah. It's coordination 12, Ice Harbor 12, air race tracking. So this is tracking the using JSATs, noisy cold water environment still occurring. And
Russ is having some problems.
It's going to require approximately, I think it was about 10 to 12 KCFS. Is that correct, Brad?
Well, what we were hoping is to get somewhere between 8 and 12, and that seemed feasible looking at the flows from September, but, you know, in response to some of the questions that Bill Hevlin had by email, looking at the flows for this part of the month, that's going to be too much. So we're, you know, we can scale it back to a little bit less if need be to make sure that we keep operations in Unit 1 for adult attraction.
What is your goal? How long and how much?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to ask Brad, what the purpose? I mean, the way I understand it is the purpose is to basically test to see how well you can get into these areas for deployment of the hydrophones, right?
Well, yeah, we're looking at what, you know, what data we can actually collect given particular noise and environments with different spills and so forth.
Oh, so you're looking at data collection now, or are you just looking at deployment?
We're looking at collection right now.
Oh, you are.
So, and now that there are hydrophones installed at Ice Harbor and in the tail race there, and we're looking at to change some operations so we can actually collect data that we weren't able to get back when the spill was happening for fish passage.
But you're also talking about collecting data in March, right?
Yeah, we're going to try to collect some data in 2013 as well.
Yeah, okay.
How does the small array that you have now extrapolate out to when we have a lot more spill in terms of noise? So, I mean,
well, that's one of the things we're trying to figure out. The good thing about having a small array in is that we can see how far out we can actually detect with it, given different spill operations. Typically, with higher spill, it's going to be difficult to put some hydrophones, the autonomous nodes particularly, in the immediate spill area just because the turbulence is too high. There's no way to really anchor them down. But if we can set up different detection arrays around that spill, you know, what we're trying to see is how accurate can we be with detections in precision with 3D tracking and so forth. And that's useful for fish that are coming down, but a lot more useful for fish that are approaching the project, too.
Well, I'm not sure you're aware because you weren't here, but, you know, back up until 2009 and in 2008, you know, this same sort of query went to USGS that was using a different, hydrophone system out there, and even though they did a little preliminary, you know, we never got anything very fruitful off the ground, so I guess I'm kind of curious about what JSATS offers over that that makes you think you're going to be successful.
Well, right now, just a little bit of pre-data that we actually had a chance to look at from this past summer was that if we deploy that hydrophone on the pier nose out at the north side of the powerhouse, that we could pick up acoustic tags in the vicinity of the powerhouse and then down to the outfall terminus. And this was, and this data was collected in conjunction with fish releases for the external tag study, so we know how many fish were released and how many were detected within that given vicinity. So, and that was with pretty much full project operation. So, you know, the little data that we have is pretty promising as far as what we can actually do with it. And so the objectives of the study were pretty much to map the noise environment in that tail race under many various operations and try to come up with an idea of what is and is not feasible to do as far as deploying hydrophones for data collection.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just, I guess air has been noise that's always been the disruptive force in the tail race, particularly
right.
in the spring. And so it, even though, you know, JSATS is more tuned to a noisy environment, you know, that's what the whole promise of that system was, I guess.
Right.
Still wondering how you filter out all the noise from air that's going to be so predominant during the times when you have a lot of fish going through. But, you know,
that's kind of what they're trying to figure out with this.
So specifically, how long and how much do you want?
Well, I mean, after I looked at the data for the discharge data for the first 9 days of October, it looks like if we do 7 KCFS for 3 hour periods, so it would be 3 hours per day. We're not trying to fill up a full, full days of spill. We're looking for 5 different treatments of 3 hours, so a total of 15 hours, and we can do it over 5 days or I haven't gotten that specific dates figured out with the project yet, although I've been on the phone with them for 3 weeks now. I'm trying to see if there's any particular days that are more cooperative for them relative to anything else. And so far it doesn't appear that it's going to make a difference what days we do it.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are the best. And then
what was that?
Monday through Thursday are the best?
Yeah.
So what's right now the average flow is between 13 and 16 in the snake, so that there's
right.
not much water to play with.
Well, the average discharge at ICE has been 17.4 from the 1st through the 9th of October.
Yeah.
So if we take 7 KCFS out of that, it leaves approximately 10.4 for Unit 1, and Unit 1 has been running around between approximately 10.2 and 10.7 for pretty much the full month.
Right. When you look at the hourlies, it goes from 9.5 to 25. So
okay. Yeah, I've been looking at the dailies,
right.
So I guess that's already a mean, but...
So that's why I was trying to figure out how much you want to do, because most likely if you do it during the heavy load hours, we can run a turbine and do the spill and stay within what the shape of the river is currently.
Yeah.
So 3 hour block should be
okay. What hours are you?
Anytime during the daylight hours.
Okay. I see that, Bill, you were seeing if we could do this more later in the afternoon.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think that should be a problem. I mean, I think whatever we can get that's going to be best for fish passage and for the project.
Well, I was thinking that's the lowest time of the day, lower time of the day for adult passage. What do other people agree with that?
Yeah, I would.
Is there any fallback issue with spill there?
Well, you're going to put it through the RSW, right?
Yeah, that'll be one of them. We're looking at bays 2, 6, and 10.
Oh, okay. Well, bay 2 is the RSW.
Right.
And that's 7K itself, right?
I believe it is.
Around. So as far as adult fallback, that's probably the best route for adults through the project.
Yeah.
If there's going to be fallback.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
It's too little fall.
But that's why I bring it up. It's just if we cared about fallback, we'd do it in the morning, not
in the
afternoon.
If a fish is going to fall back at that flow, he's looking for a
way to go home. Yes.
So I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion on that? Are we good?
So we haven't really given him a target time of day yet that you alluded to, Bill. So you want to, like, say 1 p.m. in the afternoon?
I was thinking 3 to 6.
3 to 6. Would you have a problem with 2 to 5?
They're working.
And when they're on duty?
That's all right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate you just doing one test today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Billy.
No, that's fine.
Could we get a range from noon to 6, and then when it works out, in case something happens?
Yeah. Okay. You get you Brad a range.
Scott, yeah.
Scott's proposing from 12 to 6.
Gotcha.
3 hours in there. And somebody talked about dissolved gas. This isn't going to cause any dissolved gas problem whatsoever.
Just those flows.
Part of the concern there was we'd be spilling 100% of it, depending on what the flow was.
Oh, but we're not going to.
No, that's, it'll fit.
We're going to keep 10K as to unit one.
Well, you know exactly. That? We're going to shape it. We're going to have to use the pools differently. You know the average doesn't let you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you won't have it on. Right. You're going to have to 12-hour average gas.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Instantaneous, you might hit it, but you'd have to be...
Well, ice harbor dissipates real fast.
You'd have to be right below the bay to touch to see it. That's not our client site. Right.
Yeah. We could spill the whole river.
It's such a tiny notebook.
Well, it's river a shallow. Yeah. It's a shallow tail.
Yeah.
I got my agenda on here.
I got a real quick question, Brad. This is Dave Wills with the service. How long have those hydrophones been in, and how long do you plan on leaving them in?
Well, they've been in since, I believe, September 1st. We tried to get them in July, but the conditions still were just too unsafe for those guys to get in and actually install those hydrophones on the GBS outfall terminus. The plan is to be collecting data through potentially into July again this coming year, but we'll have to see. I mean, there's concern that maybe those detection arrays are going to have to be pulled off of that outfall if flows are going to get too high this winter and early part of the year, because they don't want them to be caught by any debris and torn off. And so
doesn't look like a problem yet.
So conditions permitting, you'd like to see them there through July.
That's right.
Thanks.
Hey, Brad, this is Bill again. One other thing, could you have one of the researchers come back to FPOM, you know, midwinter with some of the results?
Yes.
Let us know. Good.
All right.
So I just had a question. Yeah. So I had another question, Agnes. Since you were doing a range from 12 to 6 p.m., are you going to notify? Do we notification of when that test is going to go on for that 3-hour period on a? When you're doing it?
We'll put it in the teletype that it's arranged.
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to coordinate that with the project. And so what'll end up happening is potentially by the day, give them a call in the morning, late morning or something, and let them know specifically when the test would happen. I'm pretty certain that target range of 2 to 5 p.m. is going to be pretty much where it's going to happen.
Okay.
Sure. And what Agnes is also bringing up is that McNary last week, we had a spill for debris test, but they didn't say they were spilling until they started.
Mm-hmm.
And so the scheduler was caught a little bit off guard, had the pool already at the bottom and spilled on top of that. So like an hour ahead is a nice thing to know so they can not make a mistake.
Still, this will get put in a teletype.
That'll be fine.
Right. What was missing in the teletype last time was notify us the hour before you want to start this. So that it was a slight nuance, but it actually almost made a difference last week.
Okay, not a problem.
So to follow up Bill's request for midwinter, when will you have what he just asked you to bring to FPOM again, preliminary results of how well this worked? What month would we expect to put you on the agenda?
Let's see, if we're in October, I would imagine something that we could talk about would be December.
Okay.
Since they're probably going to have to collect data maybe into the first couple days of November. So, yeah, I would give them a month to look at it and get back to me.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Anything else, Brad? Are you good?
I'm good.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
All right.
back to the action items. So that
wraps up. Our participant has left the conference.
Walla Walla for the core. The first one is that.
It is a Walla Walla one.
And yeah, we did not make any. I did not make any progress on this. We talked about it. I think we want to kick it out maybe as far as January, but we'll work on. I think the suggestion last month, and it was Trevor, was that we try to get a hold of maybe Doug Marsh. Just try to get some people to come and talk about some new anesthetic that was out there. The fall, as I recall, the fall is not a good time to get a hold of Doug Marsh because he usually has like a lot of use and lose, and he's gone from like the middle of November on. That's why I'm saying we may kick this one out a little ways, like till the first of the year or something.
That's probably a good idea. Or I think maybe later we could get, what is his name, Daryl Austin?
Oh, Darren? Uh-huh.
Darren, that runs the Lower Granite Trap.
Okay.
Maybe he'd come to Portland
okay.
talk about the anesthetic.
Okay.
What's the issue?
The recent anesthetic that they're using.
Cost? I mean, they're using...
the 10 times more expensive stuff.
Yeah.
What's the issue?
I think this was going to be an informational. There was no specific issue. I believe that this one was approved, but it's just extremely expensive, and most of us weren't very aware of just the technical elements of it versus the eugenol that Doug's been using for years. And so we were just going to. It was going to be an informational presentation.
Same stuff.
So maybe you're already familiar. I think some of the rest of us didn't have much of a clue.
Eugenol, we just thought just now. This is the approved version of eugenol, which jacks the price up to it's kind of high, but I don't know why.
So you're thinking not worthy of any more information? Okay. Using well, we can let it drop.
Yeah. Cost, so. And you know, eventually get into something that's more universally acceptable from the eugenol.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Excellent.
So thanks for the update.
Yeah. Trevor,
we're off
the
talk over.
Trevor wanted to get more information about it. Maybe he already has.
Yeah, but he could talk to our guys.
I know.
That's what he needed to come here for.
Yeah, but maybe there was somebody else that wanted to
hear. Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know. If there's somebody who wants to hear something, that's fine, but I just don't know what the discussion would be.
The only issue
I'll still try to call Darren and talk to him to see if there's anything else that we're missing here.
It's a better alternative, right, but it costs too much. They can reduce the price a lot.
It's really not. I mean, it's not really better. It's what it is. It's eugenol. We've been using eugenol pool oil, but it's eugenol that we've been using for years.
Does it allow the states to use it now? Because Oregon and Washington refuse to let anybody use clove oil.
Right.
So this new one may get around their headaches.
It will.
If it's approved, it'll eventually get around.
It's on the verge.
So there's obviously some difference in whatever formula they put together versus straight off the shelf eugenol.
Oh yeah.
And that so their special formula was tested and approved.
Super.
So you have to pay for all that research in order to buy it.
And until their patent expires, they're going to have the corner in the market. So.
All right. Well, we'll have an offline conversation with Trevor about that, and maybe get some information from the trap operator. The AFF task group, is there a PM assigned? Yes, there is. His name is, most of you guys know, Jeff Amott. I don't know if you've had any meetings lately, but...
Yes, we met on the 15th at Bonneville. Tech lead is Lister Hall. So it's in small projects, and we basically discussed what the issues were and what we wanted to focus on and what we thought we could do this winter maintenance period. The primary problem we feel is the high velocity past the rail pool area. So addressing the baffle and the use of valve 15 and valve 14 potentially to help distribute flow in that area seems promising for reducing the intensity of the velocity past the exit. The rail pool exit itself would be difficult to move upstream due to the fact that we have to remove the entire rail pool from the lab potentially. But I met with John Skidmore this week, and we were talking about the two-stage recovery tank, and he's involved with the commercial fishery, and they have those on boats, and
what he was suggesting sounds promising. So he's going to send me some information about recovery tanks. And then while looking at what Critvic modified at the AFF, in that upstream section that's of concern, I think there might be potential there for making modification and having an adjustable gate type slide gate opening to allow fish to go out when the
times
are. What's that?
Near the wall.
Yeah, upstream near the wall.
Okay. So what's the small price tag on the small project?
We don't know yet. We're still trying to get somebody from
hydraulic. I'm more interested in what are we doing first?
Right.
Because we need to fix that issue.
Yeah.
The issues we've identified before we get into next spring.
We talked about, the way the flow moves through that area, it all goes into the valve 15 return pool drain up at the surface, and there's wooden bulkheads around that, and maybe we can distribute flow through the water column and add a wooden bulkhead structure such as what's currently existing at valve 15 around valve 14, and through operations, we'd have to do a little experimentation with flows in that area, but maybe we can distribute flow through the water column at that area as well. When Critvic's done in there this year, before we go into a dewatered state here in early November, we're going to try to get in there and play around with the valves a little bit to see what we might be able to do just in terms of flow and slowing down flow and using valve 15 as a regulating valve for that. As far as what to do when it comes to construction, it could be a contract, or Andy Traylor and I met with the rigging crew foreman at Bonneville, and we, felt those guys out for, their workload and whether they thought they would be able to provide support if we could come up with some design criteria, and it sounded pretty promising as well. So that's something, when Jeff Ahmed returns on the 15th of October, we'll be getting into much more depth in the discussion.
Who's on your team?
So far, it's just Elizabeth Hall and Jeff Ahmed. I don't know who is going to be assigned.
Engineer,
right, yeah, I don't know who it is yet. I spoke with Elizabeth on Tuesday, and that person has not been assigned yet.
Okay.
John Skidmore wanted to be involved, too.
Yes.
Yeah, John Skidmore. That's,
yeah, yeah.
So the dewatering date for that AFF is November 5th, and you're going to play around with it beforehand?
I'm hoping the last week of October and the first week of November.
So people like Dave, if you want to go to the AFF and see it dewatered, it be a part of that, you're more than welcome to anybody here.
And after the 5th, there should be a clearance of 5.
The 5th or the
5th? I'd be interested.
The 5th. It needs to come down before Washington Shore.
So whenever we do that, let's get out a little note to FPOM so you guys can check that out, because it is pretty interesting when it's dewatered and you see the water come out of it, how the things function.
And really of interest, is getting underneath the rail pool itself and, seeing what's under there. It's quite interesting. There's been a lot of discussion about removing the braille pool since it has an angled floor, just turning it around and putting it back in so the deep part is on the upstream side, but it's not configured that way. I don't think that will work. We've looked at that in the past, and it would require much more modification than just simply pulling it out and turning it around.
John, if they're going to dewater, you think on the 5th, would this review take place that week?
That's something I'll have to talk to Jeff Almond and Elizabeth about, and we'll have to talk to Project Safety about, anybody can view it from above, but getting underneath the thing, Okay. Signing in on a clearance, and then that might be considered a confined space.
Okay.
So don't do anything on the 5th. I mean, what's going to happen on the 5th?
Dewatering the AFF.
Just the AFF separate from the Washington Shore Ladder. That's okay. What Bonneville has on there.
And how long will it be dewatered?
Oh, through the
Okay, because there's a Inland Avian Predation Work Group on the 5th and a non-tree storage meeting on the 5th. So, I wouldn't be available.
We'll nail that date down. That's not a definite date as of right now. Okay. It shifts around with the project.
Slow on the 5th, but dewatered a few days.
So we'll get that out, and hopefully, if you can join us, then that'd be great.
I think more important, at least for me, is to get a meeting set up with
Yes,
the design team and whoever the regional folks want to participate, but I definitely want to get started on discussions. Of
I did, yeah, I mentioned that to Elizabeth Hall that we needed to do that in the very near future.
Yeah.
And so as soon as Amit gets back and we have some folks identified,
we need
it'll
to
be
get on the same page as to what is going to get done this year.
Yes.
See if we're all in agreement with that.
Yeah.
So this basically is the 7.4 on the agenda, the task group updates we're talking about here, and your concerns are written out here. But
yeah,
get a team going. I know time is, we're in crunch time now.
Yeah, we're in crunch time, and I think, again, I want to make sure we're good with where you're going with this thing.
It really is. The hydraulic component is so important to this being successful.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. But, I'm like Scott's question of cost, I mean, it could be as simple as some baffles, or it could be a lot more.
Right.
If it's a lot more to actually achieve the goals, and that's the hydraulic engineers who have to tell us that.
Right.
You know, we can't do it this year, then that has ramifications, because I don't want to see adults handled for a study in there if these mods aren't made.
As a matter of fact. There's also other problems with the AFF that we need to, you know, probably address, you know, with researchers. You know, one of those is, you know, the guy that's operating the switch gate, fish getting pinched in the gates. And the fact that fish, you know, don't necessarily go smoothly down those bypass and sample flume. So, you know, there's other things to think about as well as raising the braille pool and forcing fish out, you know, to meet sample needs and things like that.
Yeah, that two-stage anesthetic wake-up thing is important.
And what John Skidmore had, you know, for information regarding that sounded pretty promising.
Well, I think there's two things we need to fix. One is that so they can actually, if they need to resuscitate a fish, they can. They don't just watch them go and, oh, well, nothing I can do about it. So that's one thing we have to do. And the other is when those fish exit whatever recovery tank they're in, they need to have a chance to get out of there without getting thrown into a grizzly before the fish ends up. And the same thing for the fish coming down and thrashing as they do to get out of there to those flumes that dump them back into that same area. Those fish, that's just a second before they're swept up if they don't know which ends up. And
There's seems to be an issue with the operation in that lab. You know, from past years, we used to operate Valve 15 at a much lower rate, which isn't going to solve the problem.
Right.
But right now, they're operating that valve to such an extreme, they run it at 90% open, whereas in the past, we run it at 55 to 60% open, which results in quite a substantial decrease in velocity in that area. So Bonneville has a winter maintenance item on their list to.
We need to establish some criteria for what that velocity is. I think that's that's one thing we need to talk about. Because it might be achievable without. If we can achieve the velocity, then we don't need the extended exits and all the other stuff. I agree with that.
Right. If we can slow it down.
Yeah. So those fish have a chance to get out of there and find their way out without getting squeezed up against the pigment.
Get this so bad.
So I understand your goals, and the guy, I think we all have the same goals. It's just a matter of what is that, what is that velocity that we agree on.
So when do you think your team's going to get assigned?
Well, Jeff Ahmed gets back the 15th, so.
Between now and the end of the month?
Hopefully.
Okay.
I mean, I'm going to press as hard as I can. So.
Hopefully have it soon after the dewatering, as soon as possible.
Yeah, whatever. Sooner the better, because time is wasting.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks for that update. So that moves us down to the updates for Portland. John Day Trash Rake Crane, Miro.
Okay. The good news is that the clutch, which is the part necessary, just arrived yesterday, and expected to return to service in late October. We'll be able to clean the trash racks, which at this point we have no indication of any debris. All the differentials are less than 1 foot.
Okay. Any questions? So return to service by the end of the month. How about the North Fish Passage numbers? I know we kind of had a bunch of emails going around about that, and we saw the numbers drop out. Some operations, and
The one thing I want to emphasize is that this is an intermediate year because of the entrance, John Day North entrance improvements. It's a two-year program, so some work was done, but there is still critical activity spending. And in fact, the ones which are pending are critical for the fall operations, which will allow us to reduce for the proper redistribution of the AWS water within the lower section of the ladder, which means we'll be able to push more water upstream as to eliminate the slow spot. Dave Banner was visiting a few days ago, and he thought that the slow spot was definitely below 1 foot per second, and it was probably between half and three quarter. We haven't done any measurements, but the bent of slow flow is just around that 180 bend. On the ladder, it's about 30 to 40 yards wide.
Can you do some measurements of that?
Yeah, we can do that. The flow test.
I think this is a clear. We clearly had an effect on fish passage this year at that location. It would be good to document.
I don't know if it's absolute velocities which are stopping fish or is it relative, because they have high velocities as they go in for the entrance, and then they're stalling because there's a rapid change.
Still, you saw a difference. I mean, you saw a difference in passage when you ran that up to 2.5.
Right. We saw immediate response. The first day we turned up AWS to basically maximum, we saw immediate response that day. And then I was trying different things. I actually opened the control section, which was corrected quickly back to normal. And then we changed the depth of weir, depth of water over weir to 1.32 to induce a little bit more flow. But then the test actually took place when everything was stable, between the 21st and the 26th of September. And we were running on average 2.2, 2.3 entrance differential, as high at times as 2.5. And we saw the record day on the, I think it was 25th or the 26th.
Since then, because of
your recommendations, we scaled down back to criteria, which is upper end, 1.92 feet. So.
Yeah, there was a direct response. I mean, I did a numbers analysis of the issue looking back last, because what I was worried about was, is this something that maybe has been going on all season? I'm not seeing that. I mean, obviously there was an issue when we stopped spill, but if you look at, say, sockeye passage for the last 4 years, it's very tight. This year was about 48% north side. The last 3 years, it's been anywhere between 44 and 57%. So it falls right in the middle of that. So what I'm not seeing is some sort of an ominous large problem here. I'm seeing a very localized problem as a result of the probably because we have a sort of a half finished situation out there, but when we stopped spill, we certainly did see a problem this year. But when you look back at the whole year, and I looked at it in separate chunks, I didn't see a problem for adult Chinook, Jack Chinook, steelhead, or sockeye. I only saw it in that September 1 through the 19th period, and then once you went to a higher flow through there, then it took care of it somewhat. Now we're back to what we kind of see in other years. It's in the same range for other years. So I'm not, you know, at first I was alarmed by, you know, maybe this entrance is a problem, this new entrance that we put in there, but I'm not seeing the evidence of that at all.
Yes,
I agree. So, and, you know, new ladders, new changes, we've seen over and over again that there's usually some response by fish for a little while before things kind of stick.
Just to reiterate what Gary said, this seems to be limited to the problem seems to be limited to low tailorage periods, now in the fall.
And that's that.
And I think it has been anticipated by the designers, Steve Schlenker, the effect of those modifications, the cutting of the stove pipe, weir, and adding the sluice gates on the lower diffusers to be able to close them down to shift again the AWS flow further upstream. We're done with this idea in mind.
Yeah, I brought out the fitter wig. I handed out this information, and that's what they said, was that they thought that this would go away.
My personal belief is that next year we'll probably have the best year ever in terms of this distribution for the North Passage.
Okay.
So in the meantime, are you going to get some measurements in that area? so we have something to compare to.
It would be useful in lieu of, we have these same kind of questions coming up with McNairy that we'll probably touch on a little bit later, and to understand what you have and where there's kind of tricky points would help us all.
When we see problems like this, it'd be good to at least try to understand it so that we can quote what's happened in the past.
Well, and it's going to help you make better management decisions on things that you like or don't like that we propose. I guess
that's exactly where I see it.
So you're going to have to return to the original operation where you had that slow corner. Are you going to be able to do that? I mean, that's tailwater dependent.
Tailwater
right?
And Corbay.
And we don't know exactly what that tailwater was, do we?
Records.
Sure.
So if we know exactly what that tailwater limit
low
is,
period.
You're going to have to return everything.
It's just extended periods. In fact, it's we just had last Monday, by the way, there was good passage again at this now criteria 1.92. There was a very good year, a good day. So there's some natural fluctuations we don't understand.
Well, that could have to do with fish. This was really in the tail race too. So, but I mean, it's at September 1 on to the 19th is what I look at as tailwater, maybe just the average tailwater through there. And then if you have that in the month of October.
And I think to answer the question, I don't think we have any ability to make any changes this year to correct this problem
before the equipment data.
You can measure that problem if we get the same tailwater.
Yeah. Steve Schlenker was there a couple of weeks ago on Friday. I'm not sure if he has taken any data. I'm assuming so.
So
but I haven't. I
let's
never
ask you.
Heard any reports.
So let's ask Schlenker if we can get some measurements out there.
Yeah. It would be good to know if we can get the actual biological response. We usually don't get that. You get to know what happened.
And then maybe we can change our velocity numbers in the fish pass.
Well, that's, what's the background for that?
It needs to be added that the pre-existing condition was also bad. I think if you're referring to that RT study by University of Idaho from now 10 years ago almost, and 99% of fish entering through the north entrance were falling back into the
tailwater,
very high, and actually south was also high, but only 50%, significantly better.
Yeah.
And there's still some improvements necessary on the south.
Well, with that said, let's move on. However, kudos to the John Day Project for getting that extra water through there and looking at the past.
It was a team effort, by the way. I wanted to emphasize that some of the ideas were coming from the operations, too, because they know the equipment, too. So that was a good example of team effort again.
Can you remind me, just before you leave that, of what percent increase of flow you're going to have with your remodel? Because overall, you've got an increase with your new pumps that you'll be putting in. It sounds like it's this year as part of that remodel. What was that percent increase in flow overall?
Well, it's actually double, triple maximum capacity of what it used to be. But, of course, the entrance area is larger now, too. So it is pretty substantial.
Yeah,
I don't know what that.
Double or triple, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, let's move on. 313 is the Trunnion pin. It's spill day 9. The dowels, that's just going to be a carryover. It's a UFR right now, being an unfunded request. And talking to the project manager, I don't know if you were here last time, but it has to have an entire safety system built. Designed and built to be able to put it in because it's a pretty dangerous situation. So that's the first step, and then to get the pin in is to install that and install the pin. It's not something you can do that easily, and it's not cheap. Might be $1 million.
Dollar pin.
Put a pin. Well, no, the pin was $1 million. I mean, the pin was.
So
I'm looking for money. I know the project's looking for money, but I can't promise you anything.
So what's your schedule?
Schedule? There is no schedule to report at this time.
This is a serious one.
I know.
Say it again. This is
say
a problem for fish that needs to be fixed. I'm just saying, if you get it on the record, it's going to be brought up.
right. grumble about it because we, and what I don't want to hear is that we want to do something else, and so, you know, we're going to put this one off. This is probably the highest priority item I can think of for O&L on the entire river.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, we're spilling. We have a spill pattern, and we can't maintain it.
I'm going to send Mr. Dykstra a message right now.
So this is going to be red tagged.
Sign my name to it.
Yes, because he's
red tagged
reporting up right now.
It is the first bay outside the wall that we go to.
Yeah.
And without it, showing some pretty huge eddies, big video of huge eddies that are set up in that area outside the wall. It doesn't affect what's in the wall. Right. That's all good. But in these high flow years, this year we ended up all the way to the other end of the spillway.
I wonder why this Bay 9 trunnion pin has worn out, whereas the other ones are still okay.
Actually, it did freeze up once before, and they were able to get grease to it to get it to work again. Yeah. But now it's froze up again.
So
they tried the same thing.
Are all of them at risk, Bob, sooner or later?
Yeah.
I think
it comes down to all that money.
You guys weren't able to really take care of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's getting the pin and then realizing to put the pin in was a lot bigger.
But I'm stepping back to why the pin failed in the first place. And it isn't the only problem with the Dallas spillway. I mean, we've got problems all
ropes.
The way across.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
of all the cleared out bays south of the wall, Bay 9 is the absolute last to use in an emergency. All the rest before.
It's in the worst condition, obviously. Yeah. And they probably got used the most, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, patterns were from north to south.
Funky.
They've always been north to south.
Yeah.
For through that passage.
Yeah, and if we're just a little bit of flow outside of the wall, it's not that bad. It doesn't look that different.
Right.
But when that flow starts picking up like it did last year, and we were putting a lot of water through, then the eddies look terrible.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't know if 9 would completely fix that eddy issue when we're flowing that much. Might look the same.
And we can manage the pattern a little bit differently.
But at least it'll give you
a little bit.
Yeah.
A lot of those bays are out, so we're kind of doing what we can.
Yeah.
We're hopping all the way down there. But we don't have control of that pattern at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because we're looking at three dead bays right there, right outside the wall.
Yeah.
Steve Chucky. Has joined the conference.
Yeah, that's why the wire ropes are important, too. I mean, really, just getting the Dallas, the whole spillway back up to speed.
Yeah.
It's a joke, Chester.
It's not getting cheaper.
The unfortunate thing, too, is they had the pin and they were ready to put it in and they could not get it. Would have cost another $20,000 when they were doing bays 1 through 8 cable and everything. Mm-hmm. They were going to do the pin, and all they needed was like another $20,000 to put in the whole contract.
That's pretty sick.
And they couldn't come up with.
Oh, that's pathetic.
Ouch.
That's
now it's a million.
2020 hindsight.
That's not.
It's all about money.
Yeah.
All right. We'll keep this one on and keep reporting on where we're at. The next is the Bonneville Unit 11 status.
Hold on. Oh, the Dallas ITS update.
Oh, that's your ITS update.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You wanted to add?
So there's a bunch of pavement that they have to redo by the ice trash sluiceway. So where it drops over the end gate on the lower end, and there's always a spray going up there, and they want to redo this pavement, and they want to do it next week. What's that?
Down at the park area?
Down in the park, yeah.
Where the oil spill was?
They're replacing that asphalt that was all ripped up because of that oil spill. So they want to repave that, but they can't when they're, you know,
there's a spray going.
Deluges water. So they wanted the sluiceway off. We said, all right, let's first try. We'll put up some plywood and see if we can block it enough for you. Because they said they can deal with a mist, but when it's like shooting in their face, they can't do
whistles.
So we put the plywood up, but as a contingency, if they start putting this pavement in and they said that the plywood's just not cutting it, we are asking for the ability to be able to shut that off for about 4 hours in order for them just to get the pavement down, compact it, and then they're out of there.
What's the date here?
It would be sometime next week. Monday through Thursday?
No, this is, and this is project staff doing this.
No, it's contract.
Contract.
Yeah.
So it's next week.
Yes.
Comments?
So.
Yeah, they'll fall back. It'd be the only real issue. We got some juvenile
passing. Yeah.
For that 4-hour deal will be improvement for that.
And they might be able to keep it less than that too, in 2 hours.
Is fallback time dependent during the day at all? The peak and
probably not
point?
Firehouse. It's just fish exit. Those that want to fall back will go back. I don't know.
How long does it take to shut that down?
Relative to the passage rate, I would expect, but I don't know what our passage rate is right now.
Minutes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I still think we can make the plywood block work. We're just going to have to play with it a little more. But, yeah, if it last resort, we would do the shutdown if we get approval.
What's the Del Passage? Well, I mean, we need coordination.
Need more information?
Well, I'm just wondering what's the Del Passage. I haven't looked at it. I haven't been following it. Passage at the Dalles to know what's going on up there.
Where is that recorded? How is that recorded? The adult fallback is recorded?
No, just overall passage.
Oh, yeah, just the adults going up? Okay.
There's going to be some relative number of adults.
Okay.
I don't know what passage rate by right now. I'm dropped off or go numbers.
Tammy will pull up the numbers for you real quick. We'll put an MOC together as well.
Yeah, if there's a ton of fish still passing, I just don't know if there are or not. That's kind of not the best timing.
So if there's a big surge of fish moving up the ladder in the morning, the best time to shut that down be in the morning then and get that finished for the afternoon?
I just don't know
what's the impact of turning it off on adult?
There's about 2,400 fish passing as of yesterday.
How much?
Wow, 2,400?
Total.
It's not so
pretty good number.
How's that break out between steelhead and chinook?
There's about
700
steelhead, 1,600 chinook, and
60
I'm rounding.
In case
you start doing the math.
Not a good time. I mean, overshoots, fish that want to go back, that's their only route. There's no spill. There's only one route.
So
do we have that many overshoots at the Dalles? Mm-hmm. Do we have that many overshoots at the Dalles?
There are.
We do, yeah. We're
going to get the die-eel passage.
They're all going to the Oregon trips downstream.
Well, I guess they could open a spill gate during those hours.
He's always been
there.
He's
there we go. A spill for the those 4 hours. Spill on day 22.
Does the mist bother the workers or impact the asphalt?
Bad timing.
It's just being able to, and it's not so much the mist. They said they can deal with the mist. But it shoots up there pretty good. I mean, it's just like it blasted right there where they need to put the asphalt down. So that's why I'm saying 4 hours is probably, you know, being really conservative.
It's going to be raining next week.
It's
going to
put it down.
It's
going to
start raining, so whatever.
Yeah, there's asphalt in the rain.
There's
I mean,
a low really. In passage.
Burn.
Well,
the negative
five. Sorry.
Noon to two. I'm in a tent tonight.
Nice timing, dude.
But there's not much passage until about.
I missed the good weather.
I know. I didn't miss Oregon. Setting their damn seasons the wrong time.
I did it with you in mind.
So how about there's a lull in the afternoon if they can do it after
maybe
between 12 and 2 to shut it off if they need it, so they start in the morning.
Or if they do it at night.
Fallback lull is. You know, you don't know what a fallback, when the lull is a fallback. Really no.
No,
when
it counts.
When it counts.
That's a loose
they're at the top of the ladder, you know, that's pretty close to the exit, so that's probably pretty accurate for exit. But I'm looking more at the abundance of fish that we have just moving into the forebay and saying that, will fish hold up? They'd probably hold up. It's probably not a big deal. I don't know if they'll go through turbines. I don't know how desperate fish might be to fall back. They're headed downstream, overshoots for a hood or click a tad or whatever.
Bend is studying in November. It's November and the first 2 weeks of December.
So there's no flexibility here as far as the contract goes, or is there?
There may be. You mean as far as night? Night work?
Night or next
next month.
We might build it. Oh, do it in November, you're saying?
What's the urgency of getting the pavement repaired?
I guess we've been waiting to do it for 3 years, so now we've finally got a
contract. 3 years?
It's been a while.
Yeah, that's where the transformer spill occurred, and it all had to be excavated. And then sample. I guess 3 years was the period of sampling, and now it's clean enough to repair.
Now, like I say, this is contingency. That's the last resort. We just shut down Sluiceway because I'm thinking we can deal with it with just the block.
Yeah. Yeah, but we have to think in terms of that it'll happen.
Right.
I would say, can you keep it down to just what do they need to do? Are they just going to actually be laying down the asphalt during those hours? Is that the deal, or do they have to get this area dried out yet before they?
No, they're laying it down.
It's the actual laying down the asphalt
install.
I just watched them do this parking lot yesterday. It was incredible. That whole parking lot was done in just a couple of hours.
Yeah, it's fast.
So it's pretty fast.
Yeah.
That's not a core contract.
Okay.
It's a real commercial contract, right?
You're telling me that you got to
just talk him out of it, Vern.
He's out to shovel a tar, stomping on it with his feet.
Small business.
The mule's not moving.
He's stuck
in the
tar.
So what about just reducing the time? Say, all right, you got 1 hour.
No, you know, we'll get it done in that amount of time, I'd be guessing.
Just
get it done.
Yeah, I would do it.
Get it done, and I would say long. Whatever.
The area with the spray is real small.
Just get it done and laud the fact that the timing really wasn't the best for this, and I should think about that ahead of time, you know, in the contracting process and try to move it out a little bit. At least until we're down to, you know, hundreds of fish instead of thousands, that's all.
Right.
How long would it be before we get down to that level?
A couple weeks.
Jeez.
Remember?
Yeah.
For that dam, yeah.
I'm going to hold off on doing it.
Well, if that's the thing, if it's a contract, then it's kind of...
They're already out there.
They're there right now. They offloaded equipment yesterday.
This is O&M?
Kind of tied our hands.
O&M funded?
Yeah.
Cost
in fact, this might even, is you sure it's O&M? It's not part of the oil spill cleanup? Yeah, which would be operations anyway. So.
Yeah, I thought it was
one way or the other.
Part of that contract.
Yeah. I think we just get it done. But
get it done, but don't do it.
Grumble.
Give Gary a chance to chew on it.
Yeah.
We'll do everything we can with that blocking wall, and then we'll, you know, we have to shut it off. We'll make sure we're on and make sure it's as short as possible.
Yeah.
All right. Now we can move to Bond 11.
They're all restless fish anyway, so.
You want to skip?
I'm still on here.
I just kind of throwing a little feeler out there to see if you're listening.
Okay, we're going to do Bond Spillway 15 hoist update on repairs.
Yeah, repairs are
finished. We're not making very much progress here.
The deck plates today.
Jeez.
Turning it to service. There's still some discussion as to whether or not to move that hoist back to 15. It currently sits at 17. They're kind of specific to the bays. It can be reprogrammed to fit another bay, or they can just physically move it back to its original position. But they'll have a decision on that probably today, not tomorrow. There'll be a few slight adjustments once it returns to service with cable tension and removing any slack with the new cables that are on it. But other than that, it's good to go.
Great. Good news.
Yeah.
All right. Way to go, Bono. How many is that? Four, five?
Years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was years.
It's been a while.
As far as... Now let's talk about averages.
You know, but playing with the Bay 15 will have...
Yeah. It's still rich,
right? Will that run into the bond spillway erosion repair and the need for clearance?
That's what I thought I just said right there.
Okay.
And would there be any issues clearance-wise for...
No.
Okay.
Like any of the adjustments?
Yeah.
No, I'll probably wait until those guys are done.
Okay. Okay.
Our next item is Unit 11.
Unit 11. So I think last FPOM been updated you guys that Unit 11 was back in service with some slight problems on startup, possibly due to it still being out of round. So the slow roll process can be automatic. It had to be done manually with some slight adjustments. Well, it's kind of been in and out over the past month, and it went out of service again on 25 September. There were some problems during startup, and it basically sliced off the top layer of the thrust bearings all the way around. Yeah. So, not good. We started to take it apart and look at what it would take to put it back together and fix that, and James Mahar said, stop, don't do anything else, leave it there. Right now, there's a meeting scheduled for next Thursday to decide a path forward with the original contractor, with the Corps, and possibly involving a third party or an additional contractor to come in and do a top-to-bottom analysis and inspection of the unit. But that'll all be decided next week.
I have a suggestion.
I've heard.
You want to be the third party, right?
Tear that thing out and start over again. We have a wonderful design at Ice Harbor. This is the spot to try it.
There you go.
Make it about a 20 new generator. Make it a
MGR.
Like a
MGR.
No, beyond MGR. This is the new design that we've been working on with the Ice Harbor upgrade. So it's more than it's far more than MGR, and I think it has a lot of promise. We always have tail race issues, but for the environment itself, it's looking pretty good. And Bonneville, we just took a look at it. I'll talk about it later, but it's horrible. It's horrible. It's the worst looking runner environment I've ever seen in many years, 20 years of working on turbines. So, you know, it seems to me that if you're having trouble with that thing, I'd increase the capacity by about half again as much flow and put a new runner in there, a new generator, and run that thing in tandem with the corner collector and pull the strings.
So that's something, Agnes, you could probably weigh, or Christine, you know, you have a schedule way out for some of that stuff, don't you? Do you have any idea where that fits in the schedule?
No, I just wrote it down to
maybe
bring
at
it
the
back.
Next DEFPA or something, yeah.
Yeah, I'll just keep throwing that out there. I just think it makes a lot of sense. I don't know, you know, what I'm talking about is actually increasing the capacity as much as we possibly can, making that the first on, last off unit, and running it in tandem, especially with the corner collector as a fish passage solution to that powerhouse, and getting away from the screens altogether.
That include a gate well refit? Redo?
Getting away from the screens altogether. I wouldn't screen it.
Oh, you wouldn't screen it at all? Okay. Okay.
Gate wells would just be gate wells.
Okay.
That's radical.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's got a lot of that.
So anyways, we'll have a more definite answer in next week.
Appeal.
It does.
But yes, as far as a broad,
it would help a lot of the O&M issues, too.
I just like the screens at Bonneville.
At least 1 year out before it returns if we prepare it.
Have screens.
So.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you're saying.
I see an advantage, right. An opportunity here.
Yeah. Somebody just joined us on the phone. Who are you? I know we got Russ and Steve.
Yeah, Steve Junkie.
Steve, are you still on?
Yes, I am. This is Steve.
And then who else just joined? Okay, we don't know who to talk about.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next one, which was the Bonneville B branch update.
Fishfowl 4-4. That's proceeding as scheduled. The work in the screen pit on the valve itself has been put on hold temporarily. Our unwatering pump went out of service. So they're working today. They started on yesterday to repair that pump so it can pump the water out of where people actually need to be working. But everything else, like the design for the new trunnion brackets and ears, are still moving forward. The engineers and designers have all they need for that.
So is that the issue? Is it just the bracket?
Yeah, the bracket's going to be replaced with a different stud pattern that fits over the studs that are currently in there. And that's really the only new piece. The valve itself is being HHS inspected today. The arms that actually move the valve seem to be just fine. There might be a small problem in the gearbox for the valve, but that can be resolved pretty quickly by our mechanics. If everything keeps going the way it is, we should have that back in service by the end of November.
be able to proceed with our normal dewatering schedule of Cascade Island starting the 1st of December.
Great.
And as an interesting note, we didn't have any sturgeon problems when dewatering the B branch entrance. And 40 or 50 in the diffuser pools that we pushed down to tailwater, and those seem to leave on their own before we drained it below tailwater. So nothing like the fiasco that we had a couple years ago.
Good job.
That was fun.
Okay. Thank you. Next one is just the maintenance schedules are on the website. Yours up there yet? Are all maintenance schedules on
there? I believe that we emailed out the Walla Walla one that Greg Moody did.
Okay.
Did everybody receive that? People don't remember. The Walla Walla winter maintenance schedule for the adult fish facilities, I believe?
On the website.
Okay.
Everything's on the website.
And let me just say, Tammy, and I mean this in sincerity, it's a good thing you got going there. I wish the Walla Walla district had something similar.
Well, actually, what we'd like to do is, if we could work with Tammy, tailor into that, because we have such a restrictive environment in Walla Walla that our hands are tied to be open and unconcealed with our information.
Yeah.
So we are hoping, and just for an update there, I actually asked our project bios to take a look for the reporting at the end of the year at Bob Cordy's Dow's adult fish report from last year, and gave our project bios the flexibility to no longer go through the process that's been in place for about 10 years where we never get any reports out. And so they have the flexibility to either do a juvenile and an adult or combine them both, with the idea that we would get it out on the FPOM website. So fingers crossed, you know, we'll see. But it's up to them now. They have a little bit more flexibility. Hopefully that will make them feel like they have a, you know, some say in the product, and they can sort of work with people here too to get it to be where it needs to go. So I'm hoping we make some progress there. And I know, you know, other things, I think we will, general reminders here, because that is why, you know, Ken's here to backfill Greg a little bit, but we have got Ken a little bit more involved, just so we have some manpower to try to get some of the things that have been falling through the cracks for years. So I'm open for general reminders in our minutes and other places, because I have talked to our supervisor and others within our program there that we have things that haven't been taking place that the region would like to see. So
So the Walla Walla schedule is on the website or not?
It
yes.
Maintenance.
Yes.
Both, or the maintenance schedule,
yes.
Yeah, for both districts. Okay. Great.
Okay, that leads us into Walla Walla's updates, 3.2.
And
I was helping Ken on the computer. What was the B branch? Just a 4-4 is up and running?
Don't worry
no.
about it. It's all
oh,
good.
Yeah.
It's all fine.
I'm
going to be out there in a couple minutes, you know, week or so, looking at it. So
they dewatered it successfully with the orifice flow, flushed all the sturgeon out, had no real impacts to sturgeon, and they voluntarily left.
Got
and
the problem.
The dewatering pump, after they dewatered it, failed, so they have to use these portables, which isn't a problem because they're working on the pump now. However, the whole fix is the gear. There might be an issue with the gear, which they'll find out today. They're doing an HSS inspection of the valve, just to do that inspection.
Right.
However, the what is it called? The bracket
trunnion.
In the trunnion bracket in, and they're going to have a different bolt pattern, I guess, to make the fix. Is being designed right now.
That's correct.
But we're still looking like we'll get this thing done before next year?
Hopefully done by the end of November.
November.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then start
dewatering
Cascade.
Good update. Thank you.
Hopefully everything
should have trusted
out
him.
As planned.
Yes.
But there are the HSS inspections.
It's all good.
It's all good.
You didn't announce it. You could hear again this
up.
Month.
I can hear. Just fine.
Got your finger over there?
I'm not going to look.
Fingers up, Gary. Fingers up.
All right. Transport? We
did that one. Ken, did you want to give the update on Dvorak?
Sure, yeah. on Monday, September 18th, Dvorak Unit 2 was dewatering, was started. for Unit 2 cavitation repair, and they had problems maintaining a seal on the head gate, so they actually ended up watering back up later that day. But then the following day, they were able to dewater fine, and the crew got in to do the fifth salvage, and all they found was just one 8-inch juvenile Chinook in good condition, no adults. They were able to, after they put the spun the unit, they were able to get the stop locks placed within like an hour and a half, but that was probably it. Probably all quite a bit, you know.
Yeah.
Good thing.
Yeah. That, and they didn't try to move ahead when they didn't get a seal, so they stopped and went back through the process. So I think our feeling is that the procedure that's outlined in here does work now.
Good.
So that's good news.
It's worthwhile.
Yeah.
Thank the crew.
Yeah, that was the Lower Granite. So Chess Brooks from Lower Granite, he's the assistant bio up there, led that with a couple of his biotechs. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they did a great job, and we did thank them because it was, you never know.
Who was it?
Chess Brooks. He's the assistant project bio up at Lower Granite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, they did a great job. So the next one, moving right along, I guess, elevated to scaling at the JFF at Lower Granite. John Bailey has sent out kind of an MFR on that, although, as you're probably aware if you're watching the numbers, we still have not gotten the descaling back to, like, say, under 2% routinely at Lower Granite. And that's been a concern for us. I think Washington, the SMP folks, kind of threw out some data late last week that this was kind of what they normally saw at this time of year on an annual basis. That hasn't totally had us go hands off. We're still looking into it. They've been through, the lower end, rake the trash racks. I think that was covered in the MFR. They started with Unit 1, and that was back, the middle of September. Then they went to, a few days. We still had it by that last week, around the 23rd, 24th, went to 2BC and 3A through C. Still had an issue, and then came back in on the 2nd of October, got a little bit more trash off 2A, and we were kind of fingers crossed maybe this was going to find it, but we really haven't found it yet. And so the only other thing that we have ongoing is they're finding this year, and this gets back to long-term maintenance, that there is several of the gate wells, several of the screens that don't appear to be able to dog appropriately when they're put in place, and so that there's some movement there, and we've had some slight bending of the frames on the ESBSs, and I think that for me that is possibly a place where we still are not able to get down to that 2% at this point in time, and we'll probably be able to report more out on that as they investigate what's going on there. But what they're thinking is that there's some corrosion down at the very bottom of that slot, so that there's movement in there so that you can't lock adequately.
Is this just Unit 1 or also?
No, this is not in Unit. I'm not exactly sure. I know one of the screens was in 3. When I asked specifically, I haven't got that information. But it's, we have one screen that's bent such that we cannot fix it at the project, and we have two more that have some slight bends that they think they will be able to repair through the winter. But it's,
are you able to get them in and out?
Yeah, so they they are able to get them out.
So you've looked at the turbine operations. Does this line up with the descaling that you're seeing?
Well, yeah, I mean, so here, I think, let's recall the sequence of what happened, and that is back in the beginning of September, Unit 1 came out of maintenance, and we had higher descaling.
Right.
And then there was an effort then to change to Unit 2 being the priority unit. In the interim there, about mid-month, we raked Unit 1, although Unit 1, remember, is restricted to kind of the mid to upper range of 1%
right
now, because it has fixed blades. So we've continued with Unit 2 and then Unit 3 back to Unit 1 being the sequence. We've really been you know, there's not that much water, and so that's where we've been. But for a while, we had units 4, 5, and 6 all out, although unit 6 came back in service last week. But we're largely running unit 2 most of the time with a little bit of unit 3, just when there's a little pulse of flow. So unit 2 is running in that mid to upper range of 1%. And, you know, kind of tried to look to see if there was any pattern there, although that's all we're running. Had folks recheck trash rack 2B when they went in to do 2A to see if any additional debris had built up there. The only thing that they found, and I think this was referenced in the MFR, was some really deep submerged logs way deep on the trash racks below where the screens would be impacted. So, you know, in terms of unit operation, you know, one of the things that I tossed, I was going to be out last Friday when we were hoping to get the descaling information, and I kind of had a list for John there in case anybody called him, you know, what else could we do, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, I mean, we could look at, again, changing unit priority to see if that made a difference.
Did you, I might have missed it, but did you try to gable dip?
No, that was one of the other things that I, but I do... Yeah, to identify whether or not it's above or below.
Right.
Yep, and I
see
it, kind of, we could do that. That is the other alternative. It's fairly, you know, labor intensive, and that was the other, that was kind of on that list.
For those gate wells?
I was not told that we couldn't do it when I made a list of four things that we could throw out to the region, and Mike Halter, the project biologist,
right,
weighed in. You know, so that is a possibility. People at the JFF end, they feel like they've been through every place that they could be having a problem of anything that possibly could have changed. At the front end, at the trash racks, they feel that they don't have an issue up there. So, you know, we have the pipe. Once you're in the collection channel that you can't do anything with right now, that we're hoping if we could do the upgrade that we could get the ability to do some troubleshooting in, should we have this. And then, you know, as we've talked through it, I mean, it's the collection channel and the pipe that we can't do anything with in season with, you know, in terms of if you had something there.
You looked at the orifices?
Yeah, the orifices are being monitored. You know, another thing I had on the list, you know, should we put some ice blocks down just in case there's something in the pipe or the collection channel just to knock it loose? We haven't done that, but that was one of my four things along with gate well dipping. We jump around. We're relatively stable, you know, 4 to 5%. Every once in a while there's a day where we jump up to 8 or 10%. But it, you know, our fish numbers move around quite a bit too, and even when we have the higher fish numbers, we're often somewhere around 5% descaling.
It's pretty high.
It's higher than we were running before we went into September.
See, I mean, for subs, that'd be around 2 or 3, maybe, something like that.
Nice to zero down the problem area. You could gate well to it. So.
Shouldn't be that high. Yeah.
So I can take that back. Yes.
I mean, I know it just depends.
Well, that would help pin down that if they're coming in beat up.
Depending on time and availability of crew.
I don't disagree. Well, it helps us as well.
Granite has the lowest descaling rate.
Does it? So
yeah,
it should be
because
a couple percent.
It's the first dam. They haven't been beat up.
The interesting thing as well is that we looked, when I was, John monitors this fairly closely, but I asked him a couple days ago, what's the descaling rate at Little Goose? Because, you know, the fish from Little Goose have gone through Granite, they've gone through the turbines at Granite, haven't been collected by the screens, and the descaling rate at Little Goose is lower. So I to me, that puts it back on the screens, mm-hmm. Which then, as I troubleshoot and tell you that we have the potential, we have a couple that are bent, and when you bend them, then that
what's
surface.
What's the sweep doing in that area?
What's what?
The sweep on the screen. If you bend the screen, that sweep's kind of. How's that working?
So in unit 3, we have one of the sweeps that is a potential in unit 3. But since unit 3 isn't our priority unit, we're not thinking that maybe drives the descaling.
Okay.
So I personally, I wish I had the information on Unit 2. I tried to get a hold of somebody to answer that yesterday on the ride down, and they couldn't answer it for me in terms of if that's where we had some of the vent.
Where are the vent screens, and if you can move them out and put in good screens in those priority two units or something, and then just see if it
Well, there might be some concern about putting good screens in the same one where the vents came out of because of why, trying to understand why they're vent to begin with.
So and, the frame doesn't come out when you pull the screens.
Yes, the frame comes out.
Frame does come out.
The frame comes out, and okay. The frame is in guides. And from what I'm getting is that at the bottom end of those guides that we may have some corrosion that doesn't allow us to get a nice tight hold at that bottom end of the screen.
Okay.
So depending on what's going on down there, we're getting some torquing or something that's doing some bending on the frames.
So when they pull them this season, they can check for sure?
Yeah, so they're in the process of working through that. And,
okay.
You know, obviously this, for me, is another sore spot because, you know, they need to do maintenance and rehab all of our ESBSs. And it's really a challenge to get them the money they need to do that. We do have some money for FY13 identified, but, you know, there's 18 screens there. Now that we've lost one, we probably don't have a spare anymore if we would go through some serious bending
really
again.
Important things to be noting for the decision makers and people in
lower. So, Ann, who's the project lead on that at Lower Granite? Mm-hmm.
Well, the OPM is Marty Mendiola, and he's the one that gave me an update, you know, last night. The chief of ops is Rich Hilt, but I think I would go right to Marty almost just with some interaction.
Okay. And I think they've been talking with Scott at some point. I'm not sure.
I think, but I'm not totally positive.
I'm going to verify with Scott.
Yeah, but no, this is a...
Yep.
This is a...
Mm-hmm. I really have an ESBS if you can help. I mean, you don't have all the big motors and rotating gears and the mesh that wears out and looks terrible.
So I guess because of that, I didn't push hard on the need to gate well dip, but I'm looking for your feedback. We were talking about that a minute ago. You know, we're now midway in October. We've got data that our SMP folks are telling us is similar to other years, and like I told you, the Corps is saying, yeah, well, we're not sure if that really, that we agree with that. We're trying to look into it further, but I'm not convinced that, yeah, that effort would be that useful at this point, but...
Yeah. It's going to take quite an effort for gate well dipping now when you got so few fish.
It's kind of where I'm...
Any Idaho hatchery somewhere you can get maybe some juveniles dumped down the collection channel?
But it won't... That would. Well, okay. But you
could
think it's a screen.
Well, I'm saying
that.
You'd eliminate that then. Yeah. I don't know. Are you on the phone still, Russ?
Yes, I am. I'm still concerned about, you know, the turbine worm blade angles and what role it played in the early high descaling rate as well. So any more on that front? Yeah, I'm still concerned that we, from my review, and I'm not an engineer, but my review of that figure that was provided with that initial memo sure looked to me like we were pushing the limit of how much water we had run through that turbine, and we've seen it at Bonneville, we've seen it at McNary, is that when we have more pressure going through that screen bypass system, that descaling and mortality can occur if we go too far over the top, and I'm concerned that we've done that with welding that blade at that angle that pushes that power limit and the upper end of the 1% operating range.
Well, I think we tried to address that when we changed the unit priority back in mid-September, because when we moved to unit 2.
I understand that. And the descaling did come down a little bit, but it's been all over the board, so we don't know if it was that unit or not. So we're going to be going in next season not really knowing if we've got too much head on that end of the powerhouse, and if we're going to be having a continual problem with descaling on collected fish at Lower Granite. That is very big concern, because Granite is the place that performs best currently for collected fish as far as SARs, and I don't want to beat them up. And I'm concerned that that angle we did may be beating them up a little bit more at Lower Granite. And yes, next spring we'll be hopefully having more flow and be running more than one unit, so we may not know that we're beating the fish up a little bit more, but I'm concerned we may be.
I mean, we could go back to the other unit priority here for the last 2 weeks of sampling and see what changed, you know, if anything, because, I mean, we went to unit two thinking that unit one was the issue
right.
that you're hitting, and, you know, we could go back to unit one. That was the preference from an adult passage standpoint to operate and see whether anything changes, because right now unit one trash racks are clean, and as we've said, we've looked at the bottom end of the JFF system down, you know, separator below, looking for debris and anything, and technically we're in the range when we're operating just one unit that unit one can meet our needs. So, you know,
why don't we try that? That'd be my recommendation. This
Russ,
put unit one back on and see what happens, see if things change.
But you don't have many fish. You're still probably going to go into the next year with the same concern. One thing, back to Dave's point, I think that putting fish through the orifice and down into the system would be a good way to at least check to see if there's a problem there. If it's not, you know your trash tracks are clean, then all of a sudden this thing comes back down to the screen or the gate well environment, which is what Russ is worried about, is the gate well environment. And you're thinking the screen might be a problem, and if you fix the screens this winter,
right.
then you're down to at least the gate
well
environment.
We dewater the JFF
problem,
as well. Right, we dewater the JFF, so, you know.
You can check it out, too.
We check out the collection channel.
I'm just trying to pinpoint the problem, and if it comes down to the gate wall environment, then you're pretty sure now that your 29-degree blade angle is an issue.
So can we do anything between now and dewatering with fish?
Right.
To eliminate that part. Get some more information.
Maybe you don't need to. You can walk through and check it when it's dewatered and find the problem, but... and just trying to pinpoint it. If you clear up everything and you still have a problem, then we pretty much know what it is. It's going to be the blade angle, the cue through the unit, and gate well environment. And we've certainly seen that as a problem in McNary, and we've seen it at Bonneville, and we saw it at John Day, too. And John Day's got the 100-foot head, so we put the SBSs in up there. That was a real problem. So we've seen it three dams, and we've seen it everywhere from a 50-foot to a 100-foot head dam. So it's not just
that when you weld the blades?
No. It's just that if you go over the top, you can go over the top and get well flow and then have high rates of injury.
Turbulence.
Hmm?
The turbulence.
In unit flow.
Yeah.
So gate well flow, which is related to unit flow. So we know that that's a problem. We know we're kind of at the below that at most dams, and we don't know where the top of that is, where we go over the top of it. But we've seen it three times now.
Well, so another way would be to work with BPA and see if there was some way that we could hold steady at certain points with a unit, if you will, and then get a complete sample at a certain range.
Yeah, anything that... is being discussed here at this time would have to be coordinated with BPA.
Right.
So getting Scott involved, since I'm just coming up to speed on all these issues.
I sort of threw this out a week ago, and we never followed up. But I think at this point in time, it might be useful for these guys' persistence in wanting to have an answer, because if we could have a complete sample at... Now, the problem we have is that at night, you're always going to drop off. So what we could do is ask SMP to go to everyday sampling, do a daytime or high peak period sample at a given, just holding it steady, and then when you go another 12-hour sample, when you go off and your load drops off to something else, and then have them look between those two, and we'd have one sample at a given range.
We'd have to coordinate that.
Yeah, no, it's not an easy thing to do. So, but
what kind of fish numbers are you collecting right now? Going to have enough to make anything?
It varies between less than 100. So like on the 4th and 5th, there was like 78 to 91. Back on the 2nd and 3rd, there was closer to 400.
So you got time.
So it just depends on how you split that if you're going to do the same, that test in one day.
Well, I think you got, and I think we almost have to decide where would we prefer to go. Would we like to go to the middle of the range or somewhere, you know, at the upper end, just to quantify that? It seems like with 2 weeks left.
Before you do it, if your number, if your scaling rates are bouncing around to such that you won't be able to see a difference, then, you know.
And as the number of fish are dropping off, it's like,
yeah,
you're hitting 50% when you got one descaled. Got two passes.
Well,
so.
But it's good something to think about it when you're thinking about how to deal with it. I'll say this, you can partition this out in different ways and then try to address.
And has
it
the descaling rate exceeded the 2% through the whole season, or is this
since
like,
September?
So
since, you know, it started to look like it was bringing Unit 1 back on. So when we brought Unit 1 back on, descaling went up. Although I'm questioning whether it was bringing Unit 1 back up or the fact that even though they were monitoring differentials, they weren't noting that there was trash building up on the screens, because when they went out and raked Unit 1, they found a fair amount of debris.
Yep.
And so, similarly, the only other place they really found debris was 2A, you know, when they finally got to that. But once so those were all cleaned, we still have descaling higher than what we went into September with. So in late August, our descaling rates were down below 2%.
And so the debris has been verified again with a rover or something like that to see what?
We do not have the technology. I think that's maybe a place that the project has asked. They've said that they've been at Hydrovision and that there is some great new kind of like Ditson sorts of cameras out there that you could potentially fit on these projects to go out and actually take a look at when there's debris, because people don't know, and obviously it's
so
manpower.
If there's an increased frequency of debris coming down in that September period, then increase.
But I did ask them to go back to 2B, and they didn't have it back as it had been the week before, even though.
Well, it seems like this issue just needs to be coordinated further with Swanville. So we'll get Marty.
Yeah, he may put Rich Hill on it, but yeah, whomever. Just start with him and he'll.
Yeah, and we'll see you on it.
Good.
Yeah, that should be interesting because, I mean, it's supposed to start raining tomorrow, and we've had this. I mean, that's going to be discreetly different from the last couple months versus going into.
Yeah, because one of the fourth thing on my list that I hadn't mentioned was how do we get a feel for the fish coming into the facility versus to know that they're not coming in that way. But I think then once we had the data from Little Goose that said we have the lower descaling rates and no other major place where we'd have fish being fed down there, we got that answer, you know, that we have something going on at Lower Granite. I guess we'll work with you to see if there's anything that we could do that we think would be useful and enlightening. There's concern, obviously, that the sample sizes are low, although if it starts raining, we may well have a steady stream of fish moving for a while so that the sample sizes would be up. So it might be worth doing it. If we're going to have more fish moving through, we might get some insight that we won't otherwise have. It'll be harder for you to hold the unit steady if we get more water, but you know, it seems like when we get that pulse in the fall of a little bit more water and the, you know, decreasing temperature, the temperature change there, that oftentimes there's a fair amount of fish that will downstream that have just been feeding in the reservoir there.
Is the descaling rate higher than the multi-year analysis that the SMP crew showed?
No, we started with that. You know, Sean provided some information to John just 2 days ago, suggestive that it was pretty much right in line with historical at this point in time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that.
I mean, that's it. Just may be a normal increase in the descaling rate this time of year. I mean, that's kind of what the data in that memo said. So I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, for you folks that usually come to us with SMP and Fish Passage Center as the Bible, I guess Corps VPA should just bow now and say, yeah, that's. That's what it says. There's no issue, guys. But anyway, where I did start is we are trying to take a look so that we do better understand, Russ.
Of course, we're really concerned.
From your from your standpoint, we're concerned as well that we identify if we do have issues.
Well, we might want to plan for fish releases in Unit 1 Gatewell before next spring. for the migration, so that we'll definitely want to operate Unit 1 in the springtime. And if there's a concern about that causing too much gay wall turbulence, then we better release some fish in that gay well just to see how well they do through the test. Either now or wait till March and do it.
So trying to find a place where there'd be fish will probably be the challenge.
Yeah. But somewhere. Get some.
Lion's fairy yearling that won't be released until next year.
Yeah.
We wrap this one up.
Yeah, we can wrap it up, and maybe you guys, if you can get some ideas of where some fish might be available, can kind of poke that back at us a little bit. It's more of a challenge in recent years because everything's so tied up in litigation as to what will be released everywhere, and nobody has the excess funds to carry excess production anymore, so it's not as easy as it once was to just go out and find,
yeah,
you know, a couple hundred fish to just take and dump. But
Rustkeeper
has left the conference.
Oh, well, lunchtime.
Oh, Russ, now we can talk about you.
Because so we know what we got.
So you have to have clean fish. You have to put clean river and fish down through it.
Yeah.
That's the other framework. Not that many fish.
The talk.
Okay, we're going to leave it that we're going to see if we can't locate some fish. If anybody has any ideas or within their organization has anything that they can, please forward it ahead, and we'll see what we can do on that one.
And, you know, NOAA's going to be doing that, the collection channel study, right, for the expanded, for the weirs, instead of the weirs and the orifices. They're going to start that probably sometime in April. So maybe they have a, Gordy might have an idea.
Piggyback on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of like it.
Yeah. April?
Well, we hope you can fix it in a hurry.
Yeah.
If you find something.
Well, they'll see the frames on the screens this winter.
Yeah, they'll be working on that to see if they can, you know, to kind of enlighten us as to.
There's nothing mysterious here about the channel. I mean, if you can go through it.
Yeah.
Post dewatering and make sure there's no problems. It's, you know what it's supposed to look like. So, and then it becomes, you know, the orifices are fine. Then it's back to Russ's issue.
Yeah.
Possibly. Or back to your issue of
bad screens.
Messed up screens. Which we should have those fixed before next year.
Right. That would be my impression that they
so
will
then,
be.
Then we're kind of back to trash racks, keeping those clean, and then less.
And that's another place, you know, for you folks that deal in all these arenas, you know, that appears to me. I know it was talked about a few years ago in Fitterwig, and that seems like a Fitterwig place where either that or someplace they could be looking at building frames to better that, and something, you know, that could just be slid down on each of those, sort of like we
follow our contract for the original screen pro.
Yeah, we
screwed up.
Need some way to better monitor, because as you're aware, they're really just looking at gate well differentials, and that isn't adequate for
the
debris.
Week after next.
All right.
Get it on the agenda to look for them to look at that. Okay. They're going to say it's O&M.
Yeah.
You know, way back a year or so ago, they somehow had it out there, and I think they had it within some of the COPs as a due out, which most of those COP items kind of fall the other way. So I guess you'd have to couch it.
Well, you know, I mean, you guys are going to be in a proof-up situation here in a year or so to meet the biop performance standards. If this isn't necessary to meet the standards, a lot of these things suddenly come back onto the AFEP program arena.
Well, and should it, maybe we could tie it into the JFF upgrade as a critical part of the JFF upgrade at Lower Granite.
Yeah, we are. Down the surf.
Yeah, that might be a logical place to tie it. Unless, of course, Bonneville had the resources and felt the need to.
Speak up.
All right, let's get moving.
Okay.
He's shaking his head.
Next one was we are adult fishway outage for diffuser grating replacement at Lower Granite. Were you going to talk about that, Ken? Or
yeah. So at the last FPOM meeting was a coordination forum for Lower Granite 13 was discussed, and the requests were like a 10-week outage of the fishwire at Lower Granite starting in mid-December, went through end of February. So that they can do their the diffuser grating replacement. And the palm is kind of leaning towards having the extra 2 weeks at the end of the regular outage, so like during March, first 2 weeks of March. And I know there was concern about the length of time for this outage. That's a long period of time to have the ladder out. And also concern about having little goose out at the same time for their annual outage. But the grating is in poor shape. It needs to be replaced. That's what the project is concerned about, you know, for safety, just for functionality. So they still want to be looking at getting the grating material for the diffuser gratings. It's going to be replaced in kind. So 1-inch space grating, galvanized, and so that's where it's at right now. I guess we need some more discussion on that.
Well, there's still the interaction between the Lamprey contract to come in and do their Lamprey mods versus what the facility has. So the facility is pushing hard to get the grating. The grating had been purchased a year or so ago, was half inch, and hydraulics decided that wasn't appropriate for Lamprey, and so they've backed off, and the project is in the process of trying to push a contract through to get the new grating and then get it installed, because I had O&M money this year for them to do it. And so, you know, we've been pushing hard. Please, you know, do what you can to get it done. I think what they came back with was they preferred to keep the 10-week outage, although in a perfect world, if everything goes well, they've got two crews working. Now, we got one fishway at Granite, remember, but we've got potentially the availability of two Lower Granite crews working on the diffuser grating replacement, so that they could potentially get ahead of schedule. But before the Lamprey contractor could come in, that they needed to get diffuser 3-6 grating in place. So what Ken didn't get to is that, you know, there's going to be a Lamprey contract out there for both Granite and Goose to go in and do their kind of standard initial Lamprey upgrades, which is putting little ramps up to the submerged orifices, and in grating places, putting just some plating to make it easier.
So where are the diffuser gratings that are being replaced, in the whole ladder or just in a certain area?
Yeah, it's... you know, what we have on the schedule is that they need to do 3-6 before anybody could go in and do anything for Lamprey there, except they could potentially go down by diffuser 14. But yeah, it's a ladder replacement upgrading.
And it's all 1-inch?
It's going to all be 1-inch galvanized. And, you know, that recommendation came out of the Lamprey working group when they came in. They came back.
Lamprey AWS passenger. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Go through the pump.
Yeah.
Come out of chunks.
Let's keep her. The conference.
This is the recovery program.
Which Lamprey work? You're talking about the core trial group?
Yeah. My impression is that, you know, I don't sit on the Lamprey group. Ken, you do. Maybe you can let us know. But what happened was that back when Tim was in my position, which would have been more than a year ago, Lower Granite had some funds and thought that they were purchasing more Lamprey-friendly grating by buying half-inch spacing. When they went this year, they have the money now to put that in place. When they went to put it in place, hydraulics folks, as well as whoever the Lamprey group is, jumped all over them and said, no, you're going to screw things up by putting this half-inch in there. It's going to change.
It would change the hydraulics enough that they couldn't do it.
That they couldn't do it. So apparently discussion ensued, and that there was newer information from this year where people questioned the 3/4 inch and how necessary it was, and so they went back to replace in kind. And I really, which I haven't been party to, but I would assume that the tribes have had the opportunity to weigh in through this Lamprey group.
I've got my Lamprey group. They are aware of grading issues. I don't know why. I'm going to talk to Brian and ask him why they would have agreed to 1 inch when 3/4.
Those diffuser pits will become nice traps.
Yes, and maybe that's what our master plan is.
And I think Portland District Hydraulic Department had special design, which was hydraulically they were equivalent to 1 inch. They didn't change the resistance. Yeah. I thought it was like kind of in-home type of design.
With a half inch.
Yeah.
Thinner.
I remember they were advertising that thing.
I thought that was not a problem, too. That surprises me.
Steve Schlenker would know.
Yeah. So right now you have 1 inch.
They are slated to go into 1 inch grading.
Have they purchased it already?
Oh yeah.
What they're doing is turning back in the half inch to get 1 inch. Yeah. So there we have contracting action, not in place yet, but in process.
What's the gap on the intake? That was always a big showstopper for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the gap in the intake is 1 inch, so that was part of the concern was, getting sucked
in. This is Steve Junkie. I've been listening to this conversation. There's some inaccuracies here. What we have is the project, when they went to replace it last year, 3/4 inch wasn't available. They ordered half inch, and it progressed past the point of changing it, and we were unaware of that at the district office. So when they brought that half-inch grating in and actually put it in place at one of the diffusers this last year, there was a lot of concern about blockage. Now, the recommendation was never for a half-inch because of that blockage issue. So we asked them to revisit the 3/4 inch or 1 inch. So there's a lot of concern at the projects, though, that if we start moving towards 3/4 inch without dealing with the intake screens, that we're going to have blockage issues. So replacing the intake screens all with 3/4 inch is very costly. So as these screens have to be replaced, just because of the degradation, our recommendation was 3/4 inch if we could do both intake and diffuser screens, and in kind if we can only get the diffuser grating replaced.
Okay, thanks for that clarification.
So also, let me throw in here, we're talking about these Lamprey improvements at Granite and Goose. For clarity, what those include will be the Lamprey orifices in the control section weir walls. So it's one Lamprey orifice on the floor of each of those weir walls. And then the diffuser grating plating, which is a landing plate. It's just a small, say, 16-inch circumference on the interface between a grating going through an orifice to concrete. So it just gives the Lamprey a place to attach there. So after the grating is replaced, it's very quick to go in and put these gratings down with J-bolts and lock them into place. So the Lamprey improvements aren't going to be a time sink. It just is a little coordination issue to make sure that we got the new grating in place before we put those platings in.
Well, how about the control section weir walls? I guess my impression was that you couldn't get in and work on those until the diffuser grating had been replaced.
Well, that would be incorrect because we don't have diffuser grating through that control section to have to replace first. Those Lamprey orifices are going through a weir wall that has concrete on both sides of the weir wall. So the grating replacement is not a controlling factor for getting those orifices done.
So when were you going to do those? at Lower Granite.
This is a showstopper at 1 inch.
Well, right now, some of those PDT members met with the project staff and the contractor at Goose, and it looks like they were planning on trying to do one ladder at a time, Goose and Granite, just because of we were getting some pushback that we couldn't have both those ladders down at the same time. So we're trying to work with the project and the contractor to coordinate getting the lamprey improvements, which again can be done in a matter of 3 weeks to a month tops, to coordinate to get Goose done first and then Granite.
You get them both done in 3 to 4 weeks? Both?
It's possible the contractor can run two crews, but if the coordination through this group has been do not take both those ladders down, we're working towards having one crew at one project and then moving on to the next.
Yeah, the only issue would be the low granite grading replacement. If they did that, it would take the full outage, like I had mentioned, plus an extra 2 weeks. So
if one ladder is down, why does it matter if the other ladder is?
If you're blocking passage at Granite,
why?
Whether you're blocking at Goose.
Yeah, what does it matter?
Yeah, I would think that actually is the bottom line, you know, and so it.
What's your timeline, Ann?
So the time frame that we had is that the project was still, Granite was still wanting a 10-week outage, if at all possible, and I believe that was going to start January, first week of January.
Yeah.
In January, so how we go.
And what I have for Lower Granite is to replace diffuser gratings 8 to 13, so that's not the entire ladder.
But that's not actually what is intended. They wanted to replace the grating all the way from down in the collection channel.
Okay, that's what I originally thought, but then okay. I just have some other. It's, you know, we can come back again here next month and talk about this some more, but the big issue from the last meeting was concern over having both ladders down, and could we better coordinate between Granite and Goose?
So we still had the
long outage needed at Granite, which kind of gets a little bit in the way of kind of the question that was just asked. If you're going to have Granite down, they're not going to get past it. The concern that I recall from the last meeting was that, okay, in the spring, you know, we still have some fish that move up through that upper snake. So best case, well, and there was this trade-off going on of time frame, you know. So I don't know. You know, I don't think from the Lower Granite standpoint, I don't think Lower Granite's going to be able to get their contract in place to start in the middle of December is probably the issue. But we can go back with that request.
Then you're going to have to break in 2 years because I don't think our guys are going to be with the. The steelhead run this year was not exactly stellar.
It wasn't. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So.
We won't
I mean, if you guys had started in December, I would say 10 weeks in December forward, that I probably wouldn't have batted an eye on that. But to start in January, 10 weeks, that puts you into mid-March.
Mid-March, yeah.
That's, you've got steelhead moving.
So the only thing you're going to run into there is because that grading's O&M funded, that we may not be able to come back for several years. It'll just depend on funding availability. Right now,
how bad is the grading now?
I believe that we have that area. There's a safety risk associated with it, human safety risk associated with it.
Can you stand on it right through?
No, you know, I guess the message that I've gotten is that at Granite and Lomo that we have safety issues that have been known for a while that are associated with this. So there's areas where we may or may not be able to put workers down to get stuff done.
Well, you might prioritize those.
Yeah, prioritize those areas.
I'd prioritize the health and human safety areas. And if there's areas that the lamprey, that's maybe a good thing. Like there's certain like gate wells that may be really bad for lamprey. Don't do those if you can wait on those
like
and
that.
Then go do the 3/4 inch later if you're going to do it a couple years anyway.
That helps with the zinc issue too.
And
that
helps with the zinc issue.
Concerns me. You do a few at a time and you let them season a bit.
Get as many as you can done in your time frame. Prioritize the ones that have to be done. And then talk to the lamprey group and say, here's some ones that have some really bad gate wells that we use for dewatering that we know we're going to get a bunch of lamprey in. If you don't have to replace them, then there you go. That might be your cleanest bet. But going into March, if you guys could start in December, I probably would have been a little more excited. But kind of way through March, and 10 weeks, and that's if everything works perfectly, which I'm sure will, because we never have any problems in any of these fish houses anywhere. So.
Okay, so that what I hear as feedback, since you initiated this, Ken, was that, you know, they're still wondering why it couldn't be started earlier. I think, you know, that gets into just getting the whole, usually the standard schedule for the adult maintenance is beginning of January that everybody dewaters, you know, kind of thing. So at this late in the game for them to change schedules around to start earlier, there's probably, it's more than just the contract. However, but next year, you know, certainly there'd be that potential. That the Lamprey Group probably needs to be talking more with operations, and we need the project involved to prioritize where we're going to replace grading to try to stay within the 8-week normal winter work window. And then the Lamprey areas that would be replaced would be those where the grading, those that were had anything to do with grading would be where the grading was worked on, and those that didn't get done would get kicked out until another year as well.
Yeah. Well, you also might like, because I know when we see John Day, there were certain gradings that when you did water, that's where you get all your lamp. So those would be the ones I would, if you could leave those and then switch them out to 3/4 later to at least make your deep waterings a little easier. You're not going to do anything about lamprey passage overall. They're certainly all play in and out of the gradings, but it at least makes the waterings a little easier.
Yeah, that 1-inch issue is another.
Yeah, I got to talk to my lamprey task group and say if they were cognizant of this or not, or what actually they thought of or what was going on. Because it doesn't sound like they were aware of half
an
inch.
It sounds like a slip backwards a little bit to me.
It doesn't really, I don't recall ever having anybody coming to this group in the last year and saying that, you know, the reason why 1-inch was being replaced and that there was actually intake screen issues that were affecting that. So, you know, I think what we talked about before, you know, you're on the phone now, Steve, is that there's a lot going on with Lamprey that when we come in here and talk monthly, you know, we have just little bits of information on and we don't always have the whole picture. And so, you know, the request that went out, I think the last time in an email to Derek was to have better communication to this group with long-term planning on Lamprey.
That's why we have Lamprey updates on the agenda now every time.
Right. So,
this is our first time.
Right. So, you know.
Hey, Ann, this is Russ.
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt, but our phones went down here, and I switched over my cell phone, but its batteries are dying, so I'm going to have to drop out here. When you guys, are you going to take a lunch break and then come back?
Probably.
Going to get through.
Yeah, we're not going to get through. We're still on updates, and we've been taking a long time.
Okay. All right, so you plan on calling, reconvening
at 1
o'clock?
We'll take a break, like noon, and we'll come back at 1.
Okay. I'll try to call back in. Hopefully our system will be backed up by then.
Okay, thanks for the heads up. And recharge your cell in the meantime or something, huh?
Well, yeah, I don't. My charger's at home, though.
Just go home.
So, yeah.
Get your car charged.
Hopefully our system comes back up. But, so, all right.
Thanks, Russ.
You should have paid your phone bill.
You bet. Bye-bye.
All right, so there's a lot of issues that need to get resolved here.
We need left to, the conference.
You know, tighten up coordination with Lamprey groups to the districts, to Ops Division, and to FBOM, which we were hoping to do with our new agenda of having updates. And you need to go back and find out, you know, what you can do about your schedules and talk to the Lamprey people about what you need to do as far as can we replace X, Y, or Z ones.
Yep. But, I mean, the one caveat you can take back is that if you're taking granite down, I don't think anyone's going to squawk too much if you have goose down at the same time. Okay, you can have both sides down at the same time as long as...
But what I hear is we really... There's a preference that we don't have granite down any longer than the 8 weeks, which is kind of...
Well, I wouldn't have... Ideally, you don't want both of them.
Because
if you stop... Because then if you stop the... Yeah, you could have granite open, but then you're stopping the passage of goose. So it's like trying to stay within your 8-week window to get... And you can have both ladders down at that time.
But you could use a longer window if you started earlier.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there may still be some flexibility with the project. Maybe they can start mid-December. So that was the original request.
No.
Yeah. It's just the grading. I don't think the grading is going to be there since they haven't. They don't have it on site yet. You know,
other stuff you guys get done. So you're basically once the grading's there, all you do is grading.
Well, you got to put.
That's the goal. You know, that's why they've got two crews that are supposedly going to get on it. So you know, that's
grading. Well, find that schedule out and bring it back. So we need to move on.
Okay.
326 Goose Auxiliary 3 status.
Little Goose fish pump number 3 actually broke down last week, and this week we're going to investigate and see what the cause was. I haven't heard anything back from the project yet, but I know what they did do was they raised up the North Powerhouse entrance number 2 to close it off to bring the rest of the entrances up to criteria. And the RPM to turn it up on the 2 operating pumps to meet the criteria, so that's where they're at right now.
So that's just an FYI. It's not really affecting the ability to maintain criteria.
Well, you had to take out one entrance, and then it was now back in criteria.
Right. Drop powerhouse number 2 entrance is closed off.
You want to keep moving then to 327?
Yeah, let's just go through these last 3.
You lived in, it works perfect. Best thing you've ever seen?
What's that?
Give me something to be happy about.
Yeah.
Okay. The lower monumental perforated raceway screen.
Yep.
I talked to Bill Spurgeon, and they put that in this year as a test to see, if it could allow for an operator to go through and small fry can get through there. That's on one of the raceways, I believe Raceway 2. And they put a submersible camera down there on the downstream side to see how fish were reacting to that. They didn't see many lamprey because I guess the conditions weren't the greatest for visibility, but they believe they saw a couple lamprey go through, juvenile lamprey, went through the plate with no problem at all. They didn't see any impingement with a fry getting stuck in there or anything. They didn't see any fry going through either. They didn't start collecting fish until May 4th this past season. So, I think that was actually already kind of past the peak of the smolt migration. So, and probably a lot of the juvenile lamprey had already passed through. So that's kind of a factor why they didn't seem to get many good video there. So next year, Bill says that they're going to try to get a portable hard drive that they can use to actually record the findings that they can then present at EPPOM.
Are they planning to do any more, or are they just going to continue with just the one screen?
Just the one screen.
Okay.
So I think the only other comment, a lot of their fish passed during high turbidity, so a camera, is marginally effective there.
No, it's impingement.
The main thing is you didn't see the impingement.
They didn't see any small fry
either, so
at all, though.
That was the big question we were concerned about, is are the holes too big, or fry going to get stuck on it? We didn't see him doing that. It's too bad you couldn't do another tail race, but screen. Get to the tail race, he's done, but oh well.
Well, I guess this needs to kick out whether it needs a more rigorous study before there'd be a recommendation that, NIMS wants to weigh in on and whether they want to allow that to go broader or not, because in general...
This is your fry concerns.
Yeah, I don't have to look at it again. I don't remember what the issue was. They went through a slot?
Yeah, the issue last year was that everybody had gone to a different size screen at the tail races based on something that had been done at Loma a while ago, and then it was slowly implemented throughout because Mary Moser had done some work and showed that there wasn't, you know, lamprey could get out. Then when they were cleaning those screens, they realized that in cleaning the screens, they were still on brushes and stuff like that getting lamprey. And so that maybe more of the perforated slot would be better. And I think it was Trevor, you know, that voiced a lot of concern about the potential for subs, small subs.
It wasn't fried. I think fried go right through it.
Right.
And that's good. I'd rather they went up through and back to the river. I don't think they should be in a barge anyway. But
Food, come on.
And some yearlings stuck at what?
You got to feed those fish when they get downstream.
Yeah.
They're hungry. They'll still get hungry.
Fry. Why not? So yeah, I think he was concerned about some yearlings actually getting stuck right in there. That ought to be either they did or they didn't.
Yeah. Right.
So there's no evidence from, you know, them monitoring it, although, as Ken's saying, they didn't record with their camera this year due to the inability to get a hard drive to record the information. So, you know, they were monitoring.
But when they pulled up and looked at the raceway, they would have seen them pinch in the hole.
So the plan is to do this again and have some video and monitoring and see if we have impingement, correct? No,
that is the path forward. We had asked for an updated F-bomb.
No. All
right, good.
It's actually going to be fish stuck in this.
Stuck in.
I mean,
just wedged in.
Yeah, because, I mean, they could impinge on any spot.
And that's part of the see how it performs with the run-of-the-river peak.
And this was done through the fall. I mean, really, that's going to be sub-yearling, so it's going to be
now.
June through now. Okay. Not the highest turbidity, but actually lower turbidity time of the year, probably.
It's ongoing. We just asked for an update because we had asked for an update periodically through the season and hadn't gotten it. So I went back and said, okay, how are we doing?
That's a nice problem.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's part of the reason we went with the oval instead of the bigger circular to deal with that a little bit. So,
but I'm not saying that. I'd like to see data that support that.
I mean, if they didn't see any impingement.
So that has to go back to the lamprey group, I think. You know, if you want to see data, that's like a lamprey research project type thing.
Yeah.
You know, for them to validate.
Well, I mean, data could be observations from the project.
Inspections. They have to do their inspections when they do the race.
Yeah, Bill does an inspection if he hasn't seen anything.
I don't see any impingement.
I just don't know, not seeing something, if you don't look, you don't see anything. So I don't know what he did to look.
Yes,
that's my question.
Was he going to be coming to the Fitterwig meeting?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that he's on the agenda either. Okay.
He should just say, I mean, just like to know if he looked, you know, this is a daily inspection, they look, they don't see anything, and you do that all year.
I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Once a month.
No.
It should be more than that.
Yeah, though. No, it should be.
But I don't know. They might not
either
hold.
Daily or every other day. Do you recall what the standard is at this time of year at Lomo?
We're just checking the tail screens?
Right.
Make sure the thing.
The technicians would, they would check it. Probably every couple of hours during the shift.
And they look to see what's on it and debris. I mean, you're trying to keep debris off. If there's a bunch of salmon stuck, you would probably report it, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that'd be the question, just to have them look back at their information and see if they saw that. And then also, they have to pull the tail race screens every so often when they do barge loading, so that'd be the time when they're going to take a look at it. So,
in Fitterwig, week after next, have Bill on the phone or.
Right.
Yep.
Somebody from the project.
To report out.
Pull your data together, and then we can talk if we need to do it again next year.
And then Trevor can listen to that, and if he's okay,
Where's Trevor?
We're probably okay, huh?
Where is Condor? Is he out chasing elk or something stupid?
Yeah.
Right here. That time of year.
We move on to.
Yep, keep
south
moving.
Fish sure. Pump 4.
Our south fish pump going four. That broke down. I think a few weeks, maybe a week or two ago, and they have yet to have the check and see. The problem is they still have 7 auxiliary water supply pumps functional. And I talked to Mark Palmer yesterday. They were having 7 running at the time, and they're meeting criteria. They're actually going to shut one pump down because they didn't need the 7th pump. So basically, the situation is okay right now. but this is kind of like just an update, an alert to let you know that about the pump failure.
How many fish pumps at Ice Harbor?
There's 8 on the south shore.
So there's 1 spare at this point in time. And what I think what happened is when they went to the spare last week, when Unit 4 first went down, the spare didn't kick up. And so there was like a 12-hour period before they got that in place. But then they got that back functional. And so now the 4th pump is still out, and they haven't troubleshot it yet. They're thinking next week they'll do that.
What's the status on the rebuild of the South Shore fish pumps? Is there a schedule for their? I can't remember when the last time they had a major overhaul.
It's
been ongoing for the last 10 years. Well, we did that big rehab at the North Shore. Put bigger pumps in.
Yeah.
Which caused more problems.
We can have that as a due out for next meeting.
Yeah.
Can't answer that.
I just wonder if we're going to be starting to do the McNary 1 pump per year rehab system going.
Well, we're going to have to look at, you know, we've got the mirrors that actually the project has prioritized right now. So over on the North Shore over there, remember at the beginning of the season we had one that gets stuck. So I think we're going to have to pick and choose here a little bit.
Okay.
But we can come back with status on overhaul for South Ladder next meeting. And the final thing then, McNary debris spill?
Yes, McNary did a debris spill on October 2nd, and that's because they had, when the reservoir went out of mop operation, you got the debris on the side of the banks that kind of gets washed in, and then it kind of collects after that time. So they had some debris build up, and they used a boat to encircle the debris and spill it. That was a
boat. Take that.
About 100-foot by 100-foot debris load that they moved over. The spill operation took place October 2nd from 10 o'clock to 10:45 hours in the morning, and. So that occurred fine, and then they still had some fine debris and milfoil, but that kind of operation isn't very effective for removing that kind of debris because the debris kind of goes under the boom. But they took care of the major concern there anyway. And last I heard, they haven't had any problems in the primary bypass, no problems with the debris plugs and nothing like that, so it served its purpose anyway.
So that's it for us then, unless anybody has a question on the debris spill.
Are you guys going to get a agreement in place with Laura Brandon to share the boat every year?
We inquired about that last fall, and the OPMs at McNary didn't want to go there right now. I think in general there's not an issue, if you will. So we did I asked about that last year and couldn't get past the OPMs on that one. So that's their project, and so my hands are tied a little bit.
Really helpful having the
And I don't, but there hasn't been a problem with Laura Granite sharing. So what's emerging now is that, you know, as soon as the spill season stops, now that we have weirs at all the Snake River dams, and I'm not even going to throw in what's going on the Upper Columbia, that we start accumulating debris in the late summer. Number one, we got no weirs operating with summer spill at Granite, but it appears that, you know, as we get into late July and through August, we're starting to accumulate debris in the forebay of McNary. They looked at doing a spill in early August, and then there was some safety issues that I think you might have questioned at the last meeting. We haven't really gotten good resolve on that, but I think if, in fact, you know, you guys are willing to work with us on that, the sooner they get at it, the better, because what happens is the first place impacted by any debris is the JFF, and you might recall last year in August that they had to actually just shut down the system because it clogged up and you started to get overflow at the separator. So it's one of those trade-offs between the fish issues and the power issues here to...
It's unnecessary. If we can get a better spill pattern or get around the safety issue for August spill, we're already spilling anyway.
Right.
We just need to change the shape of the pattern and open the gates differently.
Right. And that would be the best, probably.
Right, right. So that's why I'm bringing it up now. Is that something you guys could consider bringing them forward to change the fish passage plan to allow debris spill or have a debris spill pattern or, you know, incorporate it in the fish passage plan so we can get that to happen every year? You know, why wait till the end and go, oops, got a whole 4-bay full.
So. We just need to look at the frequency of how often we do it.
Sure.
If we could, yeah, maybe, yeah, we can maybe put that in, because one of the other things that I was going to try to sit down with the project for an FPP update on at McNairy was some wording specific to McNairy temperature issues and what should happen there. You know, that's another due out we have, so those can be two things for McNairy.
So is it typical for a debris spill to last a half hour, 45 minutes,
or longer?
I'd say like 3 hours probably is more like the average.
3 hours, okay.
So it's, what they do when they're using the boat is they go out and they just kind of move around, lasso it up, and then kind of move it over, and then drop it and get the boat out of the way and open the spillway.
And they raise the gates clear of the surface of the water?
Yeah, and they generally are moving it with a little spill ahead of time just to keep that lassoed debris moving. You guys actually went out and watched it.
They don't take it all the way up out of the way. It sucks it down through. So what they were investigating with is they didn't shut the spill off between lasso events, and so by the time they got there, it would go right through. If you have to shut it open, it takes a little while, and the current kind of breaks up. So that's the safety issue, is to see how much they can have it open and have a boat in front of it.
This is
for when we don't have
this is off season.
I'm asking if we can possibly do it in August to get
it
through. What happens is we get
in
September all of a sudden, voila, if that helps them to do it, you know, leave it in and then just run that. It's the
TSWs would suck it all out. Go right
so, well, but then you need a spill pattern for the summer that doesn't use the bays that the TSWs are in. The project would probably prefer that you would come up with a spill pattern and they could leave the TSWs in place.
Right, but that's probably less likely. But if it's possible to somehow you know better. Wrestle with this thing, then we have the ability to get some of the debris moved in August.
Yeah, so that is the issue.
Instead of stockpiling it all until September when it becomes a pain in the butt.
Right.
Okay.
So one 3-hour period in August?
One or two, you change your pattern to get the debris depending on what pattern they need. Yeah. That's what I'm asking. We can investigate that.
So, yep, some sort of a write-up in the FPP is kind of what we're looking for.
Sound like a model, huh?
Sounds like
we'll send you down in August, Gary.
Sounds like a change form.
It's a beautiful flat time here. I've been down there every August for the last 3 years. You've been air-conditioned in turbine buildings.
I think we're probably ready to keep moving here, Bern.
Please.
Yeah, no, we haven't. Yeah, okay, hold on a sec.
Where are you going?
We're going to do research Vitterwig updates. John has one, and then we'll do a RCC update and then take a break.
Yeah, this one. Is there anything more on the AFF, or are we done with that?
What's that?
Is there going to be anything more on the AFF, or do we come
I think we're pretty much done on that one.
Burn, if there's anything you need me for over this afternoon, you get it done now, because I'm out of here.
When are you out of here?
About 15 minutes. Well, if you're going until noon, that's how long I'm going to be here.
So not coming back after lunch? So how are we going to get back in?
Bill's
going to be back after lunch.
I'm not coming back after lunch.
This meeting's over at meeting's over in 15 minutes. So what do we got? Get it out there.
Ooh, sorry, you guys.
Haul ass. So,
we got five keys.
I didn't realize you had to go in the afternoon.
Updates. Is there any BPA updates we need to have Frederick's here for?
No, those are checked out with me.
All right, well, let's just keep going. We'll just keep going and keep moving and see where we get.
Get her done.
I'm trying to get
her. I don't see a whole lot.
Well, I also have a presentation today.
Yeah, but he hasn't even showed up yet, has he?
Well, he can't get in, so we're awesome. We're sitting there.
Well, you can wait till next time.
Maybe on the side of the building somewhere?
Yeah, I was going to say, on the side of the building, there's things up front.
He's doing a Sturgeon to show up.
There's a little space between the parking garage and the...
All right, well, let's get into the Fitterwig updates.
So at the last Fitterwig, we talked about the B2 AWS, and for those of you that weren't there, we have a new PM, Eric Strickland. He's going to be pushing the team pretty hard to get plans and specs done this year, and hopefully we'll have construction during FY14. And we're currently working on the 30% DDR, and the goal, of course, is to get trash racks and not float trash on those trash racks anymore, and find something that can work as well as, you know, accommodate lamprey grading in the washing machine or ladder.
Craig is talking to swapping out.
What's that?
Craig is talking to swapping out the trash racks to like a 3/4 ring.
Yes, the major thing occurring right now is the hydraulic analysis to determine whether or not we need to go 5/8 inch or 3/4 inch. And, you know, there's not too many rigs on the market that can accommodate fishing at depth down to negative 22. Yeah. But there are basket Oscar has a rig that works on cables. And RTL has been talking with the company, and it can be potentially modified and work off of rails to get down to those depths. So, I've seen video of it. It looks promising to me.
Are we going to have an alternative meeting sometime? Look at the alternatives you guys
there will be agency review at the 60 and 90%. We're building off the 2001 DDR, so having it at the 30% is probably not necessary. Yeah. But we'll keep you posted on progress.
Questions?
Did you guys happen to cover the ladder issue at Bradford?
Which one?
The broken valve and the repair work and the schedule for that?
Yeah, we did. So far, we're on schedule there.
On schedule, get her done.
When's it going to end? The four bay restrictions.
Probably.
Hopefully by the end of November.
Or sooner.
Hopefully.
Chum will start about the 10th.
Chum of 10th of November?
The latest we can start is the 10th for the agreement, unless it's super dry, we can do something different.
But is that tailwater restriction already set? Or a 4-bay?
The 4-bay is the problem. It's a foot and a half, so we're not functioning. We can't shape it properly.
But is it 12 and a half or 13 foot tailwater?
It'll be
11.5. That's going to figure.
Okay. In
and
out.
What's
that?
Now let's get the flows since you have them.
All right, fine. Just what. No,
who
we
cares?
Don't have to.
Let's move on. Move on.
Anyway.
It's the best time to see the sandbars you'll ever have for years.
Actually, I have noticed that driving back.
Yeah. There are a few
mysterious sandbars out there I've never seen before.
Are they about to calm down?
Yeah. Okay, so lamprey updates. We've got a proposal by the Fish Field Unit for some modifications in the county windows. Mr. John Dalen is here to discuss that. It is part of your agenda. If you wanted to pull up the page, it's on page 1, 2, 5. Fibers. And I'm sure you all have read that and discussed this intelligently in the next 5 minutes. John.
Well, we think we can make some improvements. We've got 4 areas we think we can improve in. Lighting, cleaning, and I want to make note as far as cleaning goes, Bonneville and John Day have our head in direction we'd like to see already. And lamprey orifices, and number 4, we think we can go with some changes, we think we can go to an infrared camera system to do our video with. And we're hoping that that's a positive thing for Winfrey also.
So there shouldn't be any impacts here.
Nope.
It's just some improvements to the existing, changing out some cameras and changing some lighting, cleaning.
We'll be going to probably SRWG for the bigger ticket stuff.
Yeah, the slots, the orifices, that's kind of a no-brainer. I'm not real happy with what's going on in the Walla Walla district, so we need to take
make you unhappy too?
Yeah, well, at some point we could say we need to consult on all these mods like that if we're having salmon impacts.
That's why we're bringing it to this group. This is not only for improving counts, but it's as you see by that table, there's passage issues for lamprey at least Bonneville, and we're just looking at some options to improve those things. And some of the lighting things, the overhead lighting, probably not a big impact.
I don't see much there. It's just those orifices. If we're talking about adding orifices or slots like we have it.
We can't do that in-house, so we're going to have to go through SRWD on that.
That's just seeing some negative effects of that that not likely to adversely affect is something I can't say.
Yeah. But we want you guys to be aware.
Well, it's likely to adversely affect, and where does that go? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming the second 2010 down should really be 2011 down on this table? Is that just a typo? Right below 2011 up?
Yeah, looks like it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions on that? Thanks, John.
Yeah, more to come, I guess, on that.
Ken, you want to move into the McNairy SFE2?
Yeah.
Hey, Ken, this is Steve Junkie. Before you guys start on those updates, I know you're pushing hard to cover some material before lunch. I just want to let you guys know that we'll be actually having presentations with these updates as well as a lot more information from the researchers in 2 weeks at the Walla Walla Fitterwig. So I don't know if you want to spend the time to go through all these materials now or not.
Ooh, I can wait. We can wait until the Fitterwig meeting.
I have no problem with that.
You want to do the handouts on?
You can go ahead and pass them out. Yeah, it's good that you got them. We'll give them something to look at. I think we heard your feedback, Gary, here on likely to adversely affect. We had that discussion a little bit at the last meeting where you weren't hearing that well and whatnot. That was the message that was taken back to people. Right now, operations position on construction items is that there is not supposed to be anything constructed that costs more O&M because we don't have the ability to do the O&M on it. And so if, in fact, that's why I was a little interested in hearing the John Day experience there. Now, Portland took a whole different approach, and that may be something that people, as they come to Fitterwig and or other meetings, needs to kick back out to the Lamprey group. And that is, you want to do something that's going to impact criteria, then you need to get into a hydraulic study to see how you maintain the criteria that we currently have, because there's a reason that we have criteria. It gives us a lot of assurance that irregardless of how we do some of the other power plant operations, that we have good passage criteria always in place. And I think that's something that a lot of people question and don't really understand and feel that it's been a picking point. But, from an operations standpoint, as we discussed at the last meeting, for McNairy, we have a two-pump operation with a one-pump backup. Right now, our one-pump backup, we do not have operational. We're very concerned at the operations level about anything that would tax that system.
Right. Yeah, I answered that.
So, if the Lamprey group wanted to was looking for new alternatives, one thing to think about is the whole new mod like John Day where you go in and redo the whole pump system and put in your other Lamprey improvements.
Do you realize that was actually a joint?
that wasn't just time break. No, and same. Last time I checked, $5 million a year would not be come close to
just throwing out options.
So if you want, if the Corps wants to give us more money for Lamprey stuff, I'm sure that would be a
well, you could do a phased approach where you did part of it in 1 year and part of it the next year.
I don't know if you're allowed to do phased approaches in CRFM anymore.
Anyway, there's lots to be worked through there, and I don't know, Ken, if they're kicking out on some of this current alternative, which is what I heard, that there was going to be more discussion of that and or some of the research updates, you know, for the sake of time, yeah, that can go out. You know, basically the take-home that we took back to Ken and for him to take out to the folks downstairs in planning was what other alternatives, and I think Trevor was the one that pushed this from a previous phone call, what other alternatives do you have that don't impact our existing operation and ability to maintain criteria? And I don't think that you had a cut and dry answer for that at this point in time, did you?
No, I mean, back at ERDC when we looked at the, you know, different models, I mean, basically we looked at a toilet slot for the prototype, and it's basically up there on the screen and in the handouts, but on the right-hand side of that picture there, and then on the bigger, on the other handout, there's a bigger blow-up of that. You know, it's a baffled box at the upstream side. Then you have the box at the downstream side of the ports. And, you know, we looked at different baffle designs, number of baffles, and I think maybe number of ports, that sort of thing. But it's not a dramatic change where it would really affect in a great quantity the amount of water. So in terms of a different alternative that would have a lesser effect on the ladder, on the entrance, I can't say we really have that.
This one doesn't. I mean, the baffles actually cut back a dramatic amount of water that comes out of that. The entrance.
I mean the prototype is probably going to have about a third less water going through that than the current deep slot we have right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So whether that will allow the salmon criteria to be met, it's hard to say, but there's a better probability that should.
This is something we've been working on for a long time, so it's nothing new to anybody who's been down there and looking at it.
Well, according to this, Ken, it's one-third the slot flow right now, 100 versus 35.
Approximately. It has a rough.
So is that extra going to make up the difference?
Yeah, we can't say for sure. I mean, you know, hydraulic engineers, you know, that it's really difficult to predict what's going to happen, you know, but...
Well, this has all been modeled. I mean, there's a scale model that's out of Mississippi. I've been through it. I know how much flow that takes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all this has been talked about at Fairway before. This is not new stuff.
Yeah,
so the only updates you have is going to be what he's talking about having more of at Fitterwig, but it seems like on the ride down, Ken, you mentioned that as well, that one of the research projects had been collecting video data and that they'd seen salmon passing through the slot this year as well, so I guess you guys are already aware of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, right now we've got a 16-inch, I think, slot that's passing 8 feet per second, which is pretty much above lamprey. Yeah. Swimming performance anyway, so I don't really understand. I mean, is it even working for lamprey? I would doubt it. Yeah, that's something we need to find out before we even worry about the salmon side of this. But,
well, just as a reminder, Gary, that's the same kind of flow we're seeing through the salmon orifices in the ladder as well.
I know.
We are seeing, you know, at 8 feet per second, yeah, that may be not the desirable target for lamprey, but it's still doable for lamprey.
Is it working as an entrance?
Well, the thing you have, this Dave Wills, Steve, the thing you have to remember, the orifices through the weirs are only 4, 5, 6 inches wide, and that's the length of the 8 feet per second flow.
Right.
I don't know what that length of 8 feet per second flow is at the bottom of the
ladder. Many yards into the tail race.
So the lamprey can get through 5, 6 inches at 8 feet per second with a burst, but not yards.
They can come around and edge. This is, yeah, you know, that's a, those are very, very different environments that you're talking about, Steve. And I what I want to know is, you know, are we even see, is this even feasible for lamprey? Before we even start talking.
Agreed, and that's why we were evaluating this year, hoping to get actually have video evidence that they were using that deep water slot. But of course, this was purely done as a pre-construction. We know that velocity is too high for lamprey, but we also want to know, not necessarily for this entrance solely, but for all ladder entrances, what our options are as far as additional attraction.
Attraction or passage?
Well, to start off with, we have to know whether we can attract them to a deep water slot and then whether they can pass or not.
That's not cameras. That's going to be RT or acoustic tag. This isn't the place to talk about this stuff.
Right. Great discussion
for what? For
this
is Fairway or SRWG, not O&M.
Yep.
We're not at that stage yet.
So the O&M issue is just we're not able to meet criteria, how do we move forward into the future?
Well, that's based on the results of this and whether or not it's even feasible for lamprey. That's why I come back to that. And we don't have data, so.
Right, so this is just pushed out is kind of where you're going?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's keep moving here. I think we're...
Let's do the avian hazing and then take a break. Oh, is there another mods for lamprey? I thought this is all going to be fitter wake stuff.
As far as lamprey updates every month, I mean, I have a handout that shows what was done at the McNary Ice and Lower Monumental lots for years. Like, this, we don't need to talk about it. I'll just pass it out.
That'd be great.
Okay, so that's just an update for them, just bring everybody up to speed, which is kind of the improved communication that we were asking for at the last meeting. You know, right. just status. What is the current status? Okay.
I almost printed this out. Thank you.
So the next one is bird numbers before avian hazing, bird numbers NWW before and after spill.
Yeah, Ann and I just talked about that, maybe throw us some data, but really this doesn't present there because I went to the avian portal that we have and looking at the overall seasonal picture, there's not really a big trend where bird numbers decrease when you stop spill. So I think maybe we just need to look at that more at a future time to see if there's any correlation along with fish numbers, you know, and
what was the point of this?
I was just, Ann and I were just thinking maybe there was some kind of pattern we could see when the flow stopped, the spill stopped, maybe bird numbers went down, but you really can't see that on a
trend. You've got a lot of correlative there.
Sure,
but
fish numbers are dropping. He needs to know how it goes with fish numbers the takeout, you know, for another time, discussion. Time. So. You know, just like we said, for the last 3 weeks, there wasn't very many fish passing. So what does that tell you? Right. Would you expect any birds to be there?
No. And that's a lot of them are moving off. I mean, the breeding season's over. They're moving off to the ocean and other places.
Right. So
until shad starts to run a little later in the season, which is about now.
So maybe just the update on McNary and the pump. This is a great update for those of you that didn't want us to do anything with the temporary. Yeah. Because in effect the permanent won't be in place for another year and a half, but the temporary should be in place by the end of November.
Is that Carl out there with a hand pump?
So we are going ahead. We mentioned this at the last meeting. We're going to go ahead with the temporary fix, and they will hopefully get that done before the end of the year. So we will have something in the spring. Bottom line.
Okay.
But it won't be the shore-based pump that will be the permanent.
That's okay.
The big gun.
Big gun.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be squirt effective anyway.
Yeah, and then I don't know what you had on wires, Ken.
At last meeting, I know there was discussion on expanding the McNary avian array, and it wasn't, you know, there's some favorable discussion towards recommending additional wires, but all members were present, so I don't know if we want to revisit that now or just...
All those in favor say aye.
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 Ken.
Has left the conference.
The handout.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, and I think I weighed in at that point in time and told you the feedback I had from Randy Chong, who would likely need to fund increases in that. And basically, we're still waiting for performance standard results to come out and see just how well we did at McGarry this year.
All I'm saying, all I said, as I said before, all I'm asking is for FPOM to make a recommendation, yes or no, that this is something that's going to be looked into. And that's based on the numbers of birds we saw there last year. And I think it's obviously something we look into.
Well, and also, last year with a high flow year, when did we have a normal flow year?
Yeah.
I guess
when DSW is in operation, and hopefully lots of fish coming out of the system.
So,
yeah. Tributary work is really working well.
Anyway, right now, I don't think there's really much room for more discussion. It looks like he has just the schedule on what's going on up there. Carl is planning to do something more like he implemented mid-season this year. So he went from the 8 hours per day to 16 hours per day to try to have better, you know, broader coverage. It's probably the main change that you see up there.
Okay. Does this committee, back to the point, recommend that we move forward on avian wires and improving avian wires at McHenry Dam? I'm asking that. And that's what I asked last time. Does the committee recommend that? I realize there's all kinds of questions about it, but I don't think they're that big a deal. I really don't.
I think I heard that the last meeting that we did have, and I just heard Dave weigh in, and I think Tom, that they had thumbs up that yes, they agreed that, you know, that was their. Or, I don't know if there's any other reps. I don't know if EPA wants to weigh in on that. But
Oregon, we still have to make decisions on transportation.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the funding issue that I brought up for them, you know, that Randy has basically said that until we decide what's going on with McNary Transport and or we see the performance standard testing results, both of those, that, you know, he's never going to cut loose anything to do anything about it in terms of dollars.
We'll have that discussion in SCT.
Yeah.
But that's not...
Yeah.
This.
So, well, you're asking, what does the committee think? Will it make an improvement? You know, and I think I'm actually interested to see this performance standard data when we get it, to see, you know, I mean, we have previous years' survival data, so we have some idea what's going on at McNary, and even though there was more birds, did anything change? Did it change drastically? You know, questions like that are unanswered at this point. So I guess, for a definitive answer, I feel it's a little premature, to be honest with you, just because we see birds.
They're just there for exercise.
It's a good place.
Well, the deal is that we know that we're culling with bird predation, and we may already be losing those fish to, you know, fish predators or something else. They may be a loss that has been invisible before, and so that's why I'm questioning whether it really has changed that much.
Well, then we'd be seeing low survival of the project, I guess. But
well, we would have seen a low survival of the project.
Yeah, that's what we're waiting for the data.
I haven't seen it in previous years.
It should have shown up. Problem like I saw last year, at least a pretty presence.
Yeah, certainly there was a lot more going on.
And the last time we saw one, that was like a John Day when we did have a survival.
Right, and then we did something.
This isn't the first
out of there.
Not the first time to the lowdown on this kind of situation.
No. Right. I don't understand the pushback. I guess I still, this seems pretty straightforward to me. We've got birds. We've got far more birds, and we'd like to see the tail race of the project. And up Columbia all the way, except for McNary, we've dealt with that.
We can take that message back to the project, you know,
if dealt with it.
What else can we do, you know, specific to that?
There's different levels of how you can deal with this. The cannon's not going to help. It's going to have to be wires along with the hazing that we've seen. I mean, that's what works. You know that. What level of wires is the question in my mind. Can it be fairly a simple expansion, or does it have to be a John Day type of expansion? You know, I'm not saying just automatically go to the John Day example and put those up. There may be just some fairly easy to do extension of wire from the powerhouse over to the spillway or to the navigation guide wall that can be done even by the project with just the nylon or wire, right? Cable. So that's what I'm asking. But I, you know,
take
that's,
it back to Carl.
That's a different issue. I mean, it isn't so much how you do it. It's just, does the committee think that it's something that needs to be addressed based on what we've seen?
I mean, I think that, yes, does, would O&M recommend putting wires in?
Right,
yes.
Then let people go into the problem of the money, the problem of how.
Or is there a better alternative?
Right, like mirrors and maybe Scott's helicopter or something like that.
Peregrine Falcons.
Smoke and mirrors, did I hear that?
22 caliber machine guns.
Pay me to fly the helicopter all day and the remote control.
Yes, in what states you
must. Can I do that?
That would be interesting way to spend your working hours.
Finish my career out there.
But I want the machine gun.
Okay, can we move on?
Yes.
You have any BPA? Scott, you got anything?
We already asked him. He said no.
Well, he might have changed his mind. Spillway coordination forms. We got Bonneville Spillway rock removals.
I think we've already...
No. We already did it. Ken put it up on the board.
The rock removal is slotted for the 22nd of October.
Cover that in Fitterwick, so...
You're good
yes,
on that?
Yes, they do an MOC brought to FPOM, so this is meeting your request from...
Right, if anybody else is... There's others here.
John Day's North Dive inspection is slotted for...
The 23rd?
The 23rd of this month. Which is Spillway 2 will be shut off as well as the AWS. It's a one-day outage.
Yep. He and Annelle will do their hydrophone work at the same time.
So, Vern, I'm sorry, what was the rock removal date start?
22nd of October.
Right. And that may be pushed back to later before they actually get into the spillway.
Did you guys do the hydroacoustic transducers already?
Yes, for Ice Harbor?
No.
No, we did not. Ken, were you going to, do you want to cover that? But essentially that's Fred Higginbotham removing the hydroacoustic transmitters from the winter work that was estimating the fallbacks during the winter period, and that is going to take place next week, I believe.
It was in November, November 5th and 9th.
Okay.
And it was... Units 2 through 9 and 11 through 14, and would require outage of each unit for 2 to 7 hours for to remove the equipment, and also would involve the adjacent gate well, I guess, well, the adjacent unit around one that you're working on.
Right.
So. So the original request was a bit earlier, and then it was moved to November. Thought there would be less fish going through at that time, less built fish.
So McNary requires the unit on either side when put divers down to be down. That's what the adjacent unit issue is. This has been done fairly routinely. I don't think.
I think we had there was a coordination last month at FPOM, right, that I missed, and then there was some negotiation on the emails, and so I think we're...
I think we've gotten a thumbs up from everybody so far, so this is just check the box. Yeah. Good, thanks. So, check the box. And then early unwatering of the fish ladder at Lower Granite, I think we covered that one earlier.
Sure did. In detail. So, jumping to task next group month. Updates, since Tom is sitting next to me, I'd like to hear what his update is.
Did a little squat.
Give me a finger.
I'll get your finger, all right.
Seven.
Okay.
The finger.
I have an update.
What's your update?
We went down to Mississippi last month and spent time looking at the Bonneville Second Powerhouse model. And I've got a bit of a watered-down few pages of a trip report if anybody's interested.
Email it as well.
I only have 5 copies there, but
you send it to Tammy.
What I'm going to try to do is get the whole thing reviewed by Walla Walla first, just because the Ice
report.
Harbor part of it is okay. A bit sensitive. But so I pulled out the Ice Harbor part. This has just got Bonneville, in it, so maybe just for the team members at this point to look at that. But I'll give you the gist of it was that I've never, ever seen a hydraulic environment as wild as we saw below the Powerhouse 2 runner. And it was amazing. John saw it. It was it looked like when you run some air through, it looked like snakes withering all through the very large elbow in that project. It's like they were saving concrete as a value engineering project or something. And the elbow is huge, and off of the runner, we only looked at the generator limit flow of about 19.2, and then a mid range of somewhere in the middle. I forget exactly what that was, 16, 15, 16, 14, somewhere in there. Both of those were pretty hideous in terms of hydraulic environment. What we've been working with, and you know, we've been looking at this new runner for Ice Harbor, and we get this very nice flow. You can add air, you can add beads, you can add dye. We don't see a rope develop a vortex off the hub of the runner, or any vortices off of the blades. But in Bonneville second, we see a very large rope develop. It actually is bizarre enough that we saw beads going back upstream under the runner, and that's, we've never seen that before. The beads were actually getting sucked back up towards the runner. This rope would whip around one way, spinning a vortex one way, then it would actually turn around and spin the opposite direction.
That's weird.
Almost, I don't even know how that's possible. And Martin Ahman was looking at it, he was like,
were you able to video that?
Yeah. And then we didn't get to the low end, which is the point that we were most interested in, you know, even though these upper levels look pretty hideous. Low end, just before we got to it, of course, the model developed a crack and water started squirting. So that was the end of that.
No bubble gum?
Yeah, it didn't hold.
Where's your little Dutch boy?
But Erdik had some video taken earlier, and we looked at that, and that can be available to anybody. And what we saw there was actually twin ropes running off of this thing. It looked like two snakes fighting in the elbow and going into the draft tube from one to the other and one to the other. So, I mean, looking at that, my recommendation is you don't want to go there. I'm not even sure you want to run fish through these units at all, which makes me wonder a little bit about our whole understanding about fish survival, since survival hasn't been that bad running through that powerhouse. But certainly the condition was worse at the lowest end, and it was slightly better in middle and slightly better at the upper end. But in all those, it's really bad. Now, stepping back a bit, what they caused the Portland District H2C guys to do is to scratch their heads. Everybody's kind of scratching their heads. The Erdik guys, Bob Davidson, you know, the thing about Bonneville Second Powerhouse is that as you go up to the upper limit, the upper 1%, that's actually a generator limit. That's not the 1% limit that would be associated with the runners. So the thought is it seems to be mismatch between the generator itself and the runner, and also between that those two pieces of equipment and the hole in the powerhouse. And so this is kind of bizarre. It's one of our value engineering glass powerhouse on the river. Saved a lot of money in concrete, but I'm not sure it helped us much from a fish passage standpoint. So
it's an area in the model. Can you run it higher and not have that generator?
I don't know. That's something to ask Davidson, if we can do that, to see if we can make this actually go away with the change in generator. But, I mean, it looks like the generator is just too small for the runners that are put in there, for one. But HTC and others are looking into this whole issue of whether we have the model actually running right. Davidson swears we do, and so does HTC, but there's still, you know, there's a question because it just doesn't look right. But, you know, if it is right, then we have a pretty poor environment there in that runner, and that's something that we'll have to be taking a closer look at. Now, the next chance to do that is in December. There's a Erdik trip scheduled for the week of the 10th of December to look at Bonneville spillway and the modifications there, or potential spillway modifications, spill pattern modifications, to minimize debris being pulled up onto the stilling basin. And what we were going to do is set up this Bonneville model at each flow. It's been repaired, so it's available to be run again They would set it up at low, medium, and high once each day, and we'd go in there and look at it early in the morning and then go on to the spillway to look at that. So anybody who's interested in going down there in December, good time to be in Mississippi, they're welcome to come on that trip from what I've heard from both Walla Walla and local districts.
Could you ask them if they go into high-high?
At high-high?
Above the generator.
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah, if we could do that and get that set up, that would be good. That's something to talk to Davidson about. I just don't know what the limits are.
Replace all the units with Ice Harbor turbines.
Well, you know, I mean, if that means anything to survival of fish, it would be a hell of a lot better environment than the runner environment. I mean, there's always tail race issues and as fish come out, but I can't see how a fish that goes through that runner is going to come out knowing which ends up. I think that contributes a lot to the tail race mortalities. So even if they may not get killed in passage through there, we still have things to look at. I mean, that's the other part of this, is this was just a qualitative look. We're just looking at it, you know, making some judgment calls. Davidson and company at Erdic will be doing a quantitative assessment with beads, looking at directional change with beads, looking at strike with beads, all the way through the stay vane wicked gate, draft tube, all the way through. And we'll get that information. The problem is they're pretty well snowed with the work that's being done for Ice Harbor, so I don't anticipate seeing quantitative data until February, somewhere in there, March. You know, I tried to push him even in March, and he was like, I don't know. So right now, I think for decision-making for next year, we're going to have what we see, what our eyes tell us. So I have video. I haven't had a chance to actually move it into something that I can send out to folks. I have some video of what I put on the
record.
So
that goes for unit priority issues?
Yeah. I don't like what I see at the low end, but I don't like to see what I see at the mid-range or even at the upper end either. So yeah. I don't know how much
it's different. Especially in the gateways.
Well, we got that side of it too. So, you know, do we go to the low end and stay there, stay away from the gatewells, and get into maybe a worse situation in the runner environment, which we have about two-thirds of our fish passing through, a third up in the gatewell, two-thirds are going through the unit.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, that was also part of the time when we had screens out.
What's that?
We had screens out. That's part of the reason why we saw a much higher turbine passage than we have seen years past, because in 11 we had the screens out for a long time.
Oh, we did in the 11, but if you look back at other years, this year, well, this year I have data.
We don't have data, which would be a good thing to have.
Yeah, I would.
So, I mean, that's the problem, is like, what do you do? Do you want to kill more fish in the gatewell, or just kill some more of the turbine? I don't know.
Yeah, I'll let you run the syntax model and tell us what the answer is, though.
I actually have that old version.
No, you do. Well, what numbers do you plug in tomorrow?
Steve Chucky has left the conference.
So that's the update I have on that component. This is, I know
one
there's a lot
several.
More to this.
Do you have anything to update on your share?
I know the FPC was working on the adult fallback issue. Have not seen an update from them yet. Have not seen the Condor or FPC's updated chew through of the survival data. So I guess we should probably schedule sometime in, say, late October, November, a meeting of this group.
Let's do that. Yeah, we're going to
before the model trip.
Yeah. Let's put down that first Wednesday of November or last Wednesday of October. It's a potential day for a meeting. I think Halloween's a perfect time for this.
31?
No, 7.
I'll be busy, so you won't have my notes taken.
Okay, the 7th of November.
It takes you all day to get your costume ready for Halloween.
there's a TMT meeting that morning. So can we do it in the afternoon?
On the 7th?
Yeah. Well, I have it down here. I don't know if it's actually happening or not.
TMT is on the calendar, but what about 1 p.m. on
That's
the
what I'm saying. We should the afternoon.
What's on the 7th? I missed that.
Okay. That works. TMT, so.
Send out an email. That will be our tentative plan.
7th.
Chum? Just a call?
All right.
Who knows by then?
So that wraps up your update. And what I'd like to do now is close. close it, before we close out the meeting, I've got Mike Parsley here from the USGS to give a presentation on sturgeon passage. I talked to Mike last year when I was at the sturgeon workshop, and we talked about bringing him in here due to all the issues we've been experiencing as we're dewatering, et cetera, with
conference call
crazy sturgeon conference and their behaviors. So we finally got Mike to come in today.
I appreciate it. I'm kind of glad I showed up when I did.
Yeah,
I was no out. Idea what time I was supposed to be here. I appreciate everybody taking the time. I'm not, nobody's got to make any decisions or anything today. This is simply just information. Do with it as you please. All I really have done here is summarize the information that the Corps of Engineers have been posting on its website. And I started this presentation about a year ago for a passage workshop that Vern just alluded to, and I gave it at AFS meeting in August in Minneapolis. That was the 10-minute soundbite. I've enhanced it a little bit for this group here. And as I said, talking with Vern, I kind of figured I might as well come here and let you guys see what's been going on out there. Again, I started this talk back about a year ago because we were having a workshop in Troutdale, one day of which was oriented towards sturgeon passage in the Columbia Basin, trying to give Flora Plant and Conservation Council and other folks information on what approaches we should be taking with sturgeon restoration, recovery, and management in the Columbia Basin. So this is just one part of it. It's what precipitated the talk. You guys are all familiar with the dams. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, but many of you may or may not be aware that historically sturgeons used to have access. It could range up into Canada, the headwaters of the Columbia, and up fairly high in the Kootenai system itself, and then up to basically American Falls and the Snake. Again, this was devised for an audience that was completely unfamiliar with the Columbia Basin, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail here, but we do know the sturgeons can get upstream via the existing fishways, and they tend to come downstream via the open spillways based on some work that we've done at the Dallas Dam. Currently, we do know that fish can pass downstream throughout the entire system if they should choose to do so, but they really can't get back upstream beyond the area where fish ladders currently exist without transportation or some other means of getting upstream. From a genetic standpoint, the least diversity is found up in the headwater areas, and the greatest diversity it tends to increase as you get downstream further. So we're doing pretty good. Really what we're talking about here, what I was looking at, is volitional upstream passage. We know what happens. We've known it's happened for years. A lot of images out there. The Priest Rapids Dam took this picture back in July of white sturgeons going through the fishway. So it's nothing really new here. But what I really want to talk about is, you know, we've been counting sturgeons and ladders for a period of time. It's not really been done consistently up until recently, but a few years ago, John Dalen, I really appreciate his efforts, and the Corps of Engineers started posting a PDF file on the website of miscellaneous fish counts, which includes, you know, grass carp and bull trout and other things like that. Sturgeon are in there, and I just figured, what the heck, let's just dive into that and summarize it. And basically, this is the kind of information you see in the report. You got a species, a ladder, date, hour, swimming direction, length, and then comments. And links aren't always recorded. Sometimes you just see something like huge. You have no idea what that is. But I figure there's information in there. And you're all aware that, you know, counting schedules all vary and things like that. So there are, you know, issues with the information, but it's still information that's worth, I thought, anyway, having a quick look at. So that's what I did, is just to summarize that data John sent me. Instead of me having to scan all the PDF pages and read the data out of them, he just sent me a spreadsheet. So that worked out really well. So what I looked at was basically the 1998 through 2012 data, which was the current data at the time, and just starting right into it, in that data set was a total of just over 4,000 sturgeon records total. Most of those were fish that were noted as going upstream. You know, few of them were noted as going both upstream and downstream, and I think those are the ones the counters see. You know, they'll kind of pass the counting station and drift back, and they believe they're the same fish. And, you know, a fair number of fish were also just noted as going downstream. I really just want to focus on this group of fish right here. I really don't, you know, pay any attention to these guys right here. So I just quickly sorted out the data and just took only fish that were headed upstream. You're all aware fish weight counts differ by dams. The Dallas has always stood out as having, you know, for what reason, greater number of fish. But, you know, just out of curiosity, just to give you a fact, you know, this gives 14 years of data, you know, way more fish at the Dalles, very few fish in the Snake River projects. And again, you know, you all know where the Snake and the Columbia are. The folks in the other audience really didn't. You know, part of this is because there was not counting going on in the Walla Walla district for sturgeons the way there was in the Portland district. So, you know, there are issues with this at all, but there is some interesting stuff there. So one of the first things I did is want to look at annual variation by project. Basically, we've got year on the bottom, number of fish on the y-axis, and then each panel represents a project. So this is Bonneville, this is the Dalles, John Day. And you can see that there's actually quite a bit of yearly variation at the different projects, and just not a lot of fish being counted or in this database anyway counted at the projects other than Bonneville, the Dalles, and John Day. But there is quite a bit of variation amongst years and amongst projects. No real surprises there. You know, you quickly want to start looking for patterns, and the only thing that I really saw was, at least over the past 4 years, between 2008 and 2011, it looked like in these three projects, counts went up and then dropped in 2011. And I would just speculate that that was probably due to the really high flows that we had in 2011, simply keeping fish.
Mike, don't you think that some of those numbers are influenced by the stocking of sturgeon into the pools? Because at that meeting last year, there was a report that they've been stocking a high number of sturgeon into the Bonneville pool. And that's why the Dalles is passing so many. And in fact, the numbers, you know what I mean? So it's not just the passage per se.
Actually, this is just counts. This is just raw fishway counts.
Right,
so
right,
irregardless of source,
right.
You know,
I
just
was just pointing
was
at
the
possible explanation that this is not just fish passage per se. It could be because of the abundance of fish in the reservoirs, which is now also influenced now in turn by stocking.
Let me go through this and I'll address questions. There really is no stocking in Bonneville Reservoir.
He was saying stacking up.
Stacking. Okay, I'm sorry. I was thinking stocking. Let me go through this and then we'll address some questions here real quick. So again, you know, just general stuff there. This record, this digital record, started in 1998. We've been looking at the Dalles for quite some time, so I just plotted the two prior years. So 1997 would be right up in here, but 1996, if we were to plot that, would actually be way the heck up here. You know, for whatever reason, in 1996, there were a lot of fish counted in the Dalles. And I don't really know what the other projects' accounts were at the other projects. We don't have that in any of our records at all. So anyway, that's kind of showing that. Looking at differences between the ladders themselves, we've known that there are differences, particularly between the Dalles being the east and the north fishways. There's quite a bit. Again, you see a lot of difference here. Nothing really surprising, but there are, you know, there's no consistency in the ladders for sturgeon passage. One thing that kind of stands out a little bit interesting is I wonder about Ice Harbor. Was it just the counter paying more attention in this fish ladder versus this one, or is there actually a difference in Ice Harbor? But, you know, we do see differences. You guys are all kind of aware of that. Timing was something I was kind of interested in, so just looking at the dates that the fish were being counted in the fishways, we can see that it looks like, you know, by and large, the fish are starting to enter the fishways in July, and they're pretty much done by the latter part of October going into November, and you're all aware that counting is starting to cease at different fishways here. You know, very little counting going on right out in here as well, but I went and looked at that a little bit further and broke it out by project, and this was kind of interesting to me. Really, the only three projects that show up are Bonneville, the Dalles, and John Day. The Dalles is this yellow, and the peak at the Dalles tends to be in August and September. It's almost a bimodal peak. What's interesting, though, is Bonneville's way over here, and it seems like the peak for the counts at Bonneville is actually in October. No idea why or anything like that, but just I thought that kind of stood out as a bit interesting. And it's kind of harder to see. John Day is kind of here, and it looks like it's kind of following a general pattern, but there's just far fewer fish in John Day as well. But, you know, this peak between the Dalles and Bonneville was somewhat interesting to me to see that. Lengths were something that are always interesting to look at. The fishway counters tend to measure in, you know, half-foot intervals. By and large, most of the fish being counted in the fishways are between 2 and 5 feet in length. The average size is about 3.5 feet in length. No real surprises there. You know, there are some larger fish that get noted in the fishways upwards. I think the biggest fish in there was the 10-footer. But by and large, the bulk of the fish being seen are that 2 to 5 foot length. And just out of curiosity, I saw Robert Stansel's report on pinniped predation, and since I was looking at this talk and I saw his report, I like the pattern here. I mean, they're almost identical. So just coincidence probably, but anyway, this is something I saw, picked up on. So again, looking real closely, I want to know if the length sufficient to fishways differ by project. It doesn't appear to at all. Bonneville, Vidal's, and John Day, the means are basically not significantly different here. The ends at these fishways are so low, you really can't say anything about those numbers there at all.
So before you keep going on your last slide and your comparison between your data and Robert Stansel's, were you trying to give a take-home that there's not selective sampling on any particular length element of the run by the sea lions?
I don't want to take anything home. I just thought the pattern was very curious, and I'm wondering if you were to take the stock assessment data and plot it on there, if you wouldn't see the exact same pattern.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, you kind of wonder what's going on. It's just one of those things. I was reading Robert's report, and I was like, wow, that pattern looks familiar. Anyway, it is what it is. It's information. So lengths by project don't appear to differ, and then when you start to look at lengths by ladder, again, I was kind of intrigued to see this. There doesn't appear to be any significant difference. There's a hint that this ladder, John D., might be passing slightly smaller fish, but again, the end here is pretty low compared to some of these other ends. This was kind of intriguing to me. I actually halfway expected to see some differences, but there really were none by the lengths being noted by the counters. We had that, and then, that's the summary of that information that's in the report. Just a quick, brief, it's, information a lot of people haven't seen. It's there. The big question is, are white sturgeon trying to get upstream? The Corps of Engineers dealt with this last January. There's lots and lots of fish. If you look at these fish, and I'm going to throw my little length frequency up here again, these fish fall way out of bounds of this typical length frequency of fish being found at the counting stations further upriver. So, the question is, are these fish actually trying to get upstream, or are they just residing in the fishway because it's January and they like being there?
These are lions outside.
Yeah, the sea lions outside, they're trying to, for whatever reason, you see a difference in distributions of fish in the lower reaches than you do upreach. So that's just a kind of a question is what, is there some sorting that's going on in the lower reaches of the fishway? Larger fish just can't make it out and turn around and go back before they get up to the counting station or what? But the length frequencies show what does get counted up there. So there's that going on, and you guys are well aware that these fish are much, much larger than what we see in the counting windows up there.
Well, that's Washington Shore. You have 18-inch orifices there, 18 by 18-inch. And I think B-branch, A-branch, and I think the Dallas has 24-inch orifices.
24,
All I'm not trying to make any statements as about why, but those are just questions.
Right.
It's like, are fish trying to get upstream and not making it? Anyway, just to really summarize this real quick, the counts don't suggest a spawning migration for sturgeon. And by that, I mean the timing is after the spawning season. The sizes are basically immature fish. These are not mature fish, by and large, that are being seen in the count windows. So it doesn't really suggest that they're trying to get upstream to spawn, unlike salmon. There's quite a bit of variation among years between fishways and dams. The size used in the fishways was similar, and that actually was relatively surprising to me. And then the last one here is fishway counts suggest a higher upstream movement that actually occurs. And I'm really basing that on the work that we did for the Corps back in the mid-2000s, where even within a year, we would see individual fish making multiple transits of the dam. So basically, some fish are being double counted.
What was that study for?
This one?
Yeah. You put radio tags on these fish.
We put radio and acoustic tags on these fish, and the intent was to look at distributions, behaviors of fish upstream, downstream of the dam, adjacent to the dam, and ultimately to try to look at behaviors within the fishways. It was slated to be a 3-year study. It got knocked off after a year and a half because, as I was told on the phone, a hurricane hit New Orleans and there was a war in Iraq and funding had to go. But that was the intent of that, was to try to start to get a feel for what's going on with passage.
But you would find fish that just rotate up and down.
We did, yeah. We did several individuals over the course of the 18 months of that study. We're doing the chutes and ladders approach up there. They'd slide down spillway pretty much, go up the east fish ladder, and come back down. And of the fish we tagged in the 4B, I think just over 10% of them actually moved downstream past the Dallas Dam. Some went clear down to the estuary. So there is, we've known that there's a substantial amount of downstream passage, probably more so than most folks want to admit, and that's of the fish that are of taggable sizes. We tag fish just over 90 centimeters in length. Smaller fish, there's likely a lot of downstream passage. That's kind of the conclusions I drew from that. You know, much more needs to be done to better understand the need for and consequences of upstream passage. You know, this is something that the workshop was trying to get at. We still don't know why surge inner fishways and what they actually do in them. That study that we did at the Dallas Dam didn't run long enough for us to actually look at, you know, how fish were moving through the fishways. We just knew they were present or absent from the fishways when they left. They're eating shad, yeah, we definitely know they're feeding on shad and doing other stuff in there, likely doing other things as well. So coming back to that workshop, and the reason that this I originally started doing this talk is the conclusion of that was that there's too little yet known regarding passage requirements, benefits, risk to support the need for large-scale surge and passage improvements from the river dams at this time. And I actually brought a copy of the workshop proceedings. If you guys haven't seen it, you have an interest, you know, let me know. I can either email you the document or give you a hard copy or something like that. But there is quite a bit in there. We had Steve Amaral. If you're not aware, sturgeon passage is a huge issue across North America right now. Probably the only place that's not a real issue is here in the Pacific Northwest. But if you're a regulatory agency or a hydropower operator, anywhere in the Midwest or in the East Coast, you are dealing with sturgeon passage issues. And so there's a lot of work going on right now. There's work going on sturgeon-friendly turbines for downstream passage. There's work going on fish elevators for upstream passage, things like that, all across the country.
Can we get that workshop proceedings through?
Emailed out or something?
Yeah,
on the FBOM page?
I'd be happy to.
Send it to Tammy.
Send it out to folks.
Well, the presentation.
The presentation is already on the website, the one that
oh, it is?
Just saw. It's this presentation.
This presentation, but the workshop.
The workshop
right.
proceedings.
If you send it to me, I'll just
So yeah, the recommendation, just so you guys know, I mean, a lot of it's directed at the managers themselves, not necessarily the fish passage stuff, so they've got a lot of work they need to do, but, you know, it's a couple of things. They're considering additional analyses to research of larval, juvenile, downstream passage and mortality. We do really suspect that there's a lot of passage of downstream fish. Modeling up in the Snake River suggested that larval transport might be an issue affecting production, but since then, a lot of laboratory studies have come in and suggested that larvae are not moving up in the water column as much as we thought. That they tend to remain near the spawning incubation site. So there is still more work to be done. You know, a couple things that, you know, that we the sturgeon community are always trying to hope and you guys at least consider is, you know, consider opportunities for incorporating sturgeon-friendly features in existing fish ladders and during fish ladder designs. If you're going to make changes, you know, at least give them a thought.
What are they?
Yeah, bigger holes.
Bigger holes. I mean, one of the things that they did at the Dallas Dam was I know we had that 9-footer stuck at the upper reach of the east ladder. And
yep.
You guys simply took out a few of the trash rack bars, which allowed that fish or fish of that size to escape. So little things like that. You know, review. So anyway, yeah, it's a lot of the stuff the managers need to interact with you folks a bit on. They have to do some stuff as well. So
here.
That was pretty much it. You know, there's no real wholesale call for, you know, you must provide sturgeon passage, but they're not listed down here.
And the struggle that we have is when we do dewatering, sometimes we have an emergency dewater and we have to deal with the sturgeons or the slow startup on the turbines. Or when you do have that emergency dewater, you know, is the right place to put them downstream or upstream? And how do you do it? So I think in the Corps is doing the best we can right now with sturgeon. I think that getting that management plan together and getting that out there to the region is something that we're going to need as we continue to fine-tune our fish handling. But funding is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, I'm not here asking for stuff.
Yeah, no, I understand.
From the genetic standpoint, upstream passage, given the long lifespan of these fish, that little tiny bit of upstream passage we have is really adequate for keeping the genetic diversity ongoing up, at least up to Grand Coulee Dam. There is, you know, substantial amount of downstream passage. So from that aspect, things are probably fine. From the manager standpoint, they might want to see a little bit. You know, if we can move fish to more productive areas, allow them to spawn successfully, those fish will trickle down, literally.
As far as downstream passage, this came up the other day when we were talking about pelts or steelhead, which and whether, you know, using active swimming to like orient to a open sluiceway or versus like inadvertently getting sucked into a turbine. But I think it seems like with something the size of a sturgeon that...
Oh. Same sizes?
No.
Well,
all sizes.
Well, it seems like with steelhead going through the turbine, often like they can detect a steelhead-sized body, but they don't know if it's alive or dead. But it seems like you would see floating dead sturgeon. Or do you have any, you know, in the tail race? But do you have any observational things to share about how often that occurs as opposed to just, you know, because they seem like a much more active swimming fish that could.
Yeah, I mean, we all have seen what we believe to be larger sturgeons that have been whacked by something, whether it's a barge prop or turbine blade. Mm-hmm. You know, you honestly don't know. The Canadians, since it was listed under SARA up there, are paying attention to this, and they have had mortalities that they believe have come, fish that have come through turbines.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Amaral, the work on with the turbines on the East Coast are showing, and they actually did the work with white sturgeons because they couldn't get Atlantic and short nose because they're listed. Short nose anyway were at the time, have shown that sturgeons are much tougher creatures than salmonids. They don't have the scales, they don't descale, so they can take a bit more of a hit. They're pretty tough fish.
Okay.
And if you look at just like Couton's work, you know, the bigger fish have a greater probability of actually getting struck. Smaller fish, you know, more susceptible to shear stress and pressure differences. But those intermediate-sized fish can likely pass through a turbine relatively unscathed.
Okay.
And I use the term relatively because there's not been studies. Mm-hmm. We don't know, other than what's been going on in the East Coast.
Any other questions?
What about stress? I mean, like at Bonneville, when they dewater, they've got some pools and they have to... They kind of let them sit in there, and the next day they come back and they physically net them out and put them in and, you know, go through a very manpower-intensive process. A lot of the other ladders have floors that are flush with the orifices, and they can basically chase them down with the tail water. I mean, do you have any thoughts on, is it more stressful to do it one way or the other? Or?
I have no thoughts other than to say that, again, sturgeon are really tough. They're slow to exhibit a stress response. They can handle a lot. As we've seen, catch and release fisheries, things like that, these fish are pretty tough. Doesn't mean that physiologically they're not affected, but they can withstand an awful lot of abuse. I'm not saying do it.
Yeah.
Save manpower if we could do that.
That thing that happened last January with the pictures that Cora put out there, that was an incredible number of fish and incredible operations. I appreciate the time that you guys, you know, again, if you ever have questions, I know there's not a lot that's going to be done for sturgeon passage. It's a happening. I guess that's kind of the key take-home message is sturgeon passage happens. We know there's downstream passage, and we know there's a small amount of upstream passage. That's it.
Thanks, Mike. Back to our agenda. I think that's going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
So we're done for the day, and I'm glad you came early, Mike. I'm sorry.
So
I was trying to get a hold of you.
So for Russ that calls back in at 1, people at the next meeting can apologize.
John Day is smaller, too. No, it's smaller than apparently.
Okay.
It's all right. Huh? Orifice is at John Day ladder. They're 18s, aren't they?
So as far as
that, they're smaller than they were.
Yeah. We're still going to have that bomb here next time.
So
Evelyn,
sure,
I actually have a bomb here again.
Sure.
Handle it.
Everybody needs to check in at 11 floor.
Whether or not we're going to use the same room.
Yeah.
I was wondering how big a fish can get up there.
Yeah.
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 She didn't ask me.
Yeah, that was this one.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I don't understand. Camaro.
Yes.
I asked Bob the same question. According to the FPP, when shad numbers reach 5,000 a day at Bonneville, you're supposed to increase your
long sewage.
Is that what you do?
Yeah.
Just based on the numbers at Bonneville, not what you're seeing there.
Yeah, exactly. Because some people were questioning the scene because it's too late.